Good morning and welcome to the February 4th, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for coming this morning and a reminder to those that have cell phones, electronic devices, to please hit the silent button. I may think I'll check mine right now as we wait. Today's meeting is a study and a business session, with the study session starting this morning at 10:04. And the afternoon business session starting at 1 o'clock. We welcome public input at our meetings, and since these meetings are recorded, we ask that if you wish to address any agenda item that you come to the microphone, speak clearly, state your name and your address for the record, and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present. Commissioner Smith is joining us by phone. Also attending is General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Clerk of the Board Rebecca Garfin. Please join me this morning in the Pledge of Allegiance and a Safety Minute, led by Griselda Gonzalez. Thank you.
Sit down.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. I'm Griselda Gonzalez, Energy Conservation Rep. And since February is American Heart Month, today I would like to talk about what the American Heart Association recommends for physical activity for adults and kids. For adults, they recommend to get at least 150 minutes a week. That's 2.5 hours of moderate intensity activity, such as brisk walking, gardening, or dancing. Add moderate to high intensity muscle strengthening activity for at least 2 days a week. Spend less time sitting. Increase time and amount and intensity gradually over time. For kids, that's if you have three to five year olds, make sure that they're physically active and have plenty of opportunities to move throughout the day. Kids between 6 and 17 years old should get at least 60 minutes per day of moderate vigorous intensity activity. Mostly aerobic, such as running, dancing, or jumping rope. Include muscle and both strengthening, weight-bearing activities on at least 3 days per week. Make sure to increase time, amount, and intensity gradually over time. Being more active will lower the risk of heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, to name a few. You will gain better sleep, have better quality of life, and sense of overall well-being. The main takeaway from this is to move more with more intensity and then sit less. Any questions, comments?
Good advice.
That's actually very good advice. I know I don't get enough physical activity, and every year I pledge to do so, but right about this time of year in February, I forget that pledge.
I'm with you on that one. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Yeah. So, commissioners, we have an agenda in front of us. Items on the agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear any such request?
Can I make one suggestion here? I made a mistake last week, and let me just own that right now, because as I was putting together some information for the board in advance, I used an earlier version of the agenda rather than the most recent one. We removed a couple of agenda items. So the numbering of the resolutions changed. So my recommendation with respect to items to move to the consent agenda is for items 9, 10, and 11. And the numbers I provided to you earlier are incorrect.
With that being said, I move to approve the agenda with the addition of Resolutions 9, 10, and 11.
Good move. Second.
Second.
Second. Any discussion?
You know, Mr. Chairman, I read through these last night, and again, they're numbered differently, but there was one that I had some questions about. Just, nothing too important, but I believe it was at Resolution 11 about the LIDIG contract. So do you mind if we go ahead and keep that one on the regular agenda?
Commissioners?
Fine.
So we'll move 9 and 10 to consent. Okay. So all those in favor of moving 9 and 10 to consent?
Aye.
It's been all those against?
The ayes have it.
Thank you for that. And by the way, just so you know, that there was nothing substantively that changed about these from my note to you. So it's, but we're very comfortable discussing item 11, so we'll make sure we have the right people here to do that.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Well, next, Steve, we have the quarterly district performance plan. Would you like to take over?
I would like to start this off. So, this is the end of year report for 2018, and recall that the way that we do this is by exception, but of course the end of year is a little bit different from the others because we have a lot of items that don't get measured until the end of year, so we'll have more than the usual number of items to go through for this discussion. We have changed our structure a little bit, hopefully to make it easier for you. We had one of our SMT members who noted that it's a little difficult for you to follow along as to which item are we moving to next. So if you look on the right-hand side of the material that you have, what you'll find is highlights next to the name, which means that that item did change from the third quarter to the fourth quarter. And so you will hopefully now be able to follow along easier with who's up and what item it is that they're talking about.
Great.
So I want to take a moment and just remind you that this is a year in which we did not get as much done as we had originally planned, and that's primarily due to the cryptocurrency issue that really overtook us this year. But I do believe this is a fair reflection of what we were able to get done. Also want to mention one other thing, and that's that we've added a new element this year for clarity purposes. An item may not get completed in a year, or it may be completed at a date different than what was identified as the target. So we would identify that item as red because we're trying to not only get the item done but get it done on time. In this case, we've added the words completed after deadline so you're able to see that not because I think a reasonable question was if you didn't get it done, then are you going to do it next year? Well, it may already be done. So we'll be letting you know when something is done even though it didn't meet the deadline. So we'll be walking through these by individual responsible for each one of these items, and we'll start with Mike Coleman.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. I have the first item, which is item B on page 1, the fiber installation service interval. The target was 14 days. We made that 3 of the 4 quarters, but a prioritization of resources related to the mitigation efforts on the PPB caused us to go up to 16 days in the fourth quarter.
Pretty close.
Close, but no cigar.
And you may recall that Mike has actually proposed making this target harder to meet for 2019.
Correct.
I've got the next couple of items that had to do with preparing materials for the strategic plan. We had a number of interim deadlines to try to get ready. We did not hit a couple of those. We did get the work done, though, before the end of the year. And, of course, we're launched now on the strategic planning process. So we were able to mostly catch up and keep on the schedule. So we're still have the schedule for 2019 that we had originally anticipated, which is to try to move through this and get to conclusions by the summer of 2019. And with that, we'll move over to page 2. Back to Mike.
On page 2, the first item, the fiber expansion through Q4. We did miss that. We ended up reprioritizing the resources which affected the make-ready work for the Chumstick and Mary Canyon zones, causing a deferral to 2019 for those two areas. We did compensate for a big portion of that miss by bringing in other areas and mitigating the total number, so we achieved 901 rather than the 1,059 that we had targeted.
And just a reminder from our 2019 performance plan discussion, Mike and John have a strategy in place to better understand the National Electric Safety Code work, using a contractor to help us try to compensate for the problem that we ran into in 2018. With that, turn it over to Lorna.
So for items F2, B, C, and D, we focus our efforts on hiring in quarters 1 through 3. In quarter 4, we do outreach, and so we have completed these different outreach efforts in addition to some others.
Andrew Grissell will be sitting in for Greg Carrington this morning.
Thank you. And I am covering F4, electrification research and collaboration program implement work. And so this year we identified potential battery sources for Stehekin project, looking at how they are starting to go above hydro output at times, as well as always looking to see if there's ways to reduce diesel usage up there. We also submitted joint applications with the Department of Energy, as well as to the Department of Energy with Link and PNNL on looking at a way to reduce demand usage for fast charging of buses. That grant did not get accepted. However, we have found some opportunities for that in 2019 with Washington State dollars that we're going to look into and most likely apply for.
Good morning, Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. I've got F7, and we did provide an update to you regarding the BB Bridge camping pilot, I think in late 2018. As you recall, we decided not to go forward with the camping pilot for this year as we continue to evaluate online reservation systems and how that could assist with camping reservations at BB Bridge Park, whether or not there is a pilot. So look forward to updating you on that process later in the year as we continue to evaluate vendors. And then I've got the next one on page 3. This relates to working collaboratively with the City of Wenatchee and the Land Trust related to access to the Home Water Preserve. There's a number of things happening here, and what we did in 2018, we were engaged with those parties as conversations were occurring. We'll continue to be engaged in 2019. The three main issues are fire access, the trails themselves, either developed trails that were authorized or trails that were unauthorized that exist on the Home Water Preserve, and then the proposal by the City of Wenatchee and the Land Trust to build a new trailhead at the end of Vaden Lane. So a number of issues there that could impact the Home Water property, and we will continue to be engaged.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. We're now into Objective 2. And I have a couple on the metrics and targets where for the electric system reliability, basically the uptime of the system, we had a goal of 99.98. Pleased to report we had a 99.993, which is probably one of the best years we've had. So, again, we met that. The second one is on water system integrity. When we look at leaks per 100 miles, our target is less than 30. We were at 5.6.
Mike Coleman, I've got the next item, C, network system composite uptime, which measures the uptime of the core, the links, and the nodes, and we achieved 100%. We'll note that that's the second year in a row that we've achieved 100% on that metric against a target of 5.9, the 99.999%.
I'm just blown away by these numbers. I mean, reliability at 99 point, we thought we were doing great at 99.993, now we're 99.9. Anyway, 98 to 99.993, that's phenomenal. We just kind of sit back and smile, that's phenomenal what we're achieving. Mm-hmm. And then the 100% uptime, right?
Right.
Amazing. So, terrific.
Thanks. I have Objective 2, E, 1, and 2 on page 4. First one is associated with acquiring our energy efficiency targets. Our goal for this year was 1.7 average megawatts, and our actual was just over 1.8 average megawatts. Did a great job there. We are also looking at assessing the cost effectiveness of demand response programs for different customer sectors. This was completed. There are some cost-effective measures out there. There are some barriers to having those implemented, and so we're going to be working on those barriers over this next year.
Good morning, Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. At the bottom of page 4, we had a goal to have the C9 turbine hub received by the end of the year. This was our second large unit repair at Rocky Reach. That one has been delayed 35 days due to cavitation repairs that we shared with the board recently on the progress report there. Next item, next two are mine as well, on page 5, Powerhouse 2 modernization. We had a goal to award the bid by the end of the year. This one, we did change processes along the way to go to the design-build process rather than a traditional design-bid-build. And so that request for quotation is actually out being advertised as we speak, projected to close in March. So we're on our way there for Powerhouse 2. The hydro asset management plan, we had a goal to complete documentation and train engineering project management on asset information and turnover. We had a goal by 12-1. We actually completed that. We didn't meet the target date, but we completed it on December 11th.
John Stoll again, Commissioners. Down at the bottom of page 5 under L2, we had a goal to get out a bid for multiple transformers. That was by the end of the year. That was completed. In fact, this afternoon, as part of the resolution process, you'll hear an update on where that stands. At the next one under 4, we had a goal to do a step tank survey, and that's the pressure tanks and the electric facilities around that in the Lake Wenatchee area. So we went through and surveyed the system to get a condition assessment, and that was completed as well.
On page 6, item M4, develop the KPIs and metrics for the fiber asset management program by 12-1. We deferred that milestone to 2019 due to resource constraints, so it is red.
Mike, KPI metrics, KPI?
Key performance indicators.
Oh, yeah, should know that. Thanks.
We let an acronym slip through there. The next one under N2 for the telecom asset management program, implementing the asset class systems and hierarchies by Q4. Again, that was deferred to 2019 due to resource constraints and therefore was red.
Okay, and I've got 03 related to functional strategies for asset classes by Q4 for district services. We did actually just complete that, and so going ahead, we'll continue to refine that information. Also going to broaden our look under district services beyond parks and do some work in our hatcheries relative to asset management.
Commissioners, under Q, the Advanced Intelligent Grid, we had Objective 3, and that was to develop an automated metering infrastructure request for proposal to have that approved by the board by year end, and that was completed.
And towards the bottom of page 7, execute strategic relicensing plan for Rock Island. That was completed on time, on schedule.
Commissioners, down to Y, we are now into the execution of our capital plans. We completed our target, which was greater than 80% for customer utilities business unit.
And I have the next one, which is the executing on 80% of capital plans on schedule and budget through year end for fiber and telecom. The actual was 83.1% and therefore blue for the end of the year.
Okay, I'm going to take Lorna's then. So we had an item for Lorna with respect to providing influential input on employment benefits, labor, and safety relations. Regulation. Oh, there she is.
Sorry, I had to step out for Tessa. Where are we?
How about if I'll just pick
are we
it
on
for
7?
You.
Okay. So, the legislative issues, it's complete for 2018. It's really an ongoing thing. So, pretty busy right now actually with legislature in session.
Okay, I've got 3 on page 10. The first one is related to our fisheries programs. We did complete those on schedule. D is NPDES permit requirements for Dryden Fish Acclimation Facility. We did get that permit in hand in quarter four. And on the bottom is the continuation of our water rights investigation and resolution process, and we completed that per schedule.
May I jump in, Justin?
Yeah.
So the NPD, the National Pollution Discharge and Elimination System permit, so we talked about that permit related to, I think that was Rock Island, but I didn't realize that it was also an issue at Dryden Fish Acclimation Facility. So is that based on, so that's not temperature, that's on a discharge of oils, or what is that?
I do not know the particulars there. I certainly can provide that information for you.
Okay. I probably just missed it. I just didn't know we had any issue up there at Dryden. Because
yeah,
we don't have any moving parts, do we?
We'll ask Aline to come up and help.
Oh, okay. Hi.
Use the microphone.
Need the mic.
Aline Underwood.
No. Just swallow it.
Thanks.
Then closer.
So to answer your question about Dryden Acclimation Facility, this was the phosphorus TMDL that Ecology implemented or put out in about 2009. So we've been working to get our permit that actually specifies the limits of phosphorus we can discharge from our hatchery facility there.
Oh, okay.
In the springtime.
So it's the same, it's basically the same national organization or entity that is requiring us to have a permit for various kinds of discharge.
Yes. So the total maximum dissolved load refers to numerous water quality.
Right, TMDL. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so this particular TMDL is only relative to the standard for pH and phosphorus.
Phosphorus. Okay.
So we do see other TMDLs with temperature and
right.
things like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I've got the first couple on page 11 as well. Top one is related to the Intiat irrigation canal. That was a stretch goal for 2018. We did complete additional design work and feasibility studies and just have final approval pending at Fish and Wildlife. It looks like, based on the construction window, that we're into 2020. So this work will not be completed in 2019, but we continue to make I think good progress on the permitting end.
Justin, are those wells or river intakes?
River.
In Antia. Oh, okay.
The second one under I is related to our ongoing efforts, looking at scenario planning relative to climate change. That acronym there, RMJOC, refers to the River Management Joint Operating Committee, which includes BPA, Corps of Engineers, and the Bureau of Reclamation. So we're using that data as we do other sources as we look at long-term climate impacts to the district.
So, Commissioners, I have the last one under this Objective 3, and it regards to the Peshawson Wastewater Capital Improvements. Pleased to announce that we're currently on schedule through 2018 to have that complete and compliant over this next year.
Good morning, Commissioners. Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. On the top of page 12, we did meet all of our financial metrics for the year, including our debt reduction schedule in addition to our metrics. And then stay tuned, because next board meeting we will be back with more details around our financial results in our Q4 financial review.
I've got the next couple. So with respect to Columbia River Treaty, we were not successful in getting the U.S. government to issue a termination notice. State Department continues to believe that it's not an appropriate time to do that. And, we have candidly backed off some to give them some time to conduct the negotiations before we would press forward again. We'll see how successful they can be in those negotiations. We have been able to keep the Northwest Utility Group together. The funding remains robust for joint participation by the utilities, and the Northwest Congressional Delegation remains heavily engaged. We have been beginning to think through the alternative to a negotiated agreement. So what happens if the State Department is unable to come forward with a negotiated agreement, and what particularly would that mean for us, because we have the Canadian Entitlement Allocation Agreement, our share of the return, that contract runs out in 2024. So if there's not a resolution, you still have to have a resolution to what happens to our share of that. We've done a fair amount of work in this arena, but we have not concluded on a strategy at this point.
So, Steve, what is it that the State Department is saying? Why is this not the right time?
Their belief is that you should put a good faith effort into the negotiation process first before issuing the termination notice, and that negotiations just began last summer, and that they're not far enough along in that to be able to determine that, in fact, a good faith negotiation has come to a resolution that they can't come to a deal.
Okay.
I have a item 4I2 at the top of page 13, and it's under our stabilize and enhance wholesale electric revenues, stay within hedging limits through Q4. So as part of our hedging policy, we have certain limits on volume and timing of when we of our hedging programs, and so this was accomplished. We stayed within all of those limits.
And then next on page 13, KMNN. These were all completed. They are the completing of our rating agency outreach that we do throughout the year, the business planning cycle, the adoption of the 2019 budget, as well as testing of our retail electric metrics, which we have in a pilot testing phase.
The next one, commissioners, we've reported on this before, but just with the impact of the large load effort, the moving forward on a future rate plan has been pushed forward into this next year. The second one is proposed changes to the fees and charges as part of the budget process. That was completed per the schedule.
And under objective 4P1, we have to execute a five-year 2019 to 2023 five-year slice by the end of this year. That was delayed for large load work. And then similarly for item Q2, design and implement long-term strategies, that was also delayed for the large load work that we had. And then down under S2 at the bottom of page 14 is optimize the district's wholesale portfolio. And two was present long-term energy capacity carbon recommendations from request for proposals in the region to our senior team. We considered opportunities. This was completed. For example, we considered opportunities for incremental slice sales, considered a request for information submitted by a Northwest utility, and we also offered products to other regional utilities. So we were working on those. Top of page 15. I also have a one, and this was to work with our local entities to identify hubs that could potentially be industrial hubs, to go out and look at those and see what sort of resources were available there. This project was complete. We do have a folder of and a spreadsheet of some sites that they asked us to look into, and so this was completed.
They being the port in particular.
Oh, right. Yep. Port, some of the cities, we got a full geographic representation of our county with that project.
Did that include the county as well? Those discussions include?
Yep. Yes. And then the last two items on page 15, those were also delayed due to the large load work.
We're now at the top of page 16. First one there is the hydro cost per normalized megawatt hour. We did come in under our target. Target was $19.25 per megawatt hour, and our actuals are at $18.70 for the year.
I can say it's important to understand these metrics are all based on budget. So did we hit our budget targets?
And I have the second item there, item B on page 16, under objective 5, the fiber cost per active connection. The target was $440 per active connection. We came in at $390.72.
Commissioners, I have the...
Can I just ask a question? Mike, has that been pretty typical for
performance? I know I see it's been under, we've reached the target, but
it's
in the ballpark.
We've normally been much closer to the target. There was a one-time actuarial adjustment that actually lowered my cost this year, and that's the reason you're seeing the gap between the 440 and the 390. And so normally we're very much closer to what we had forecasted and what was in the budget.
Thank you.
I have the next four. The first one is distribution O&M cost per normalized kilowatt hour. The target was less than 3 1/3 cents. We came in a little over 3 cents. The next one was the fully loaded electric cost. The target was 6.34 cents. It was just a hair under 6 cents. Switching gears in wastewater, we have a O&M cost per, that's equivalent residential unit of 1,033. We ended up at 868 and some change. And then on water, we have an O&M cost per 1,000 gallons, a target of 578. We're at 5.58.
John, for the benefit of people out there listening, would you explain fully loaded electric cost? Normalized KW?
Yeah, the fully loaded would be all things brought into that rate calculation. So I guess in its simplest terms would be, I guess if our load matched our generation, that would probably be the rate we would charge customers. That's very simple. There's a lot of other elements to it, but it just gives you a sense of our, you know, we charge our customers a little over 3 cents on average.
And normalized KW? KWH?
That's just spread out over a historical average.
Yeah. Okay.
Commissioners, Eric Walquist.
Go
ahead, Commissioner. Sorry.
That there's a pretty significant change on the wastewater downward. Is there an explanation?
You know, I would like to look into that, Commissioner Smith. Nothing off the top of my head identifies anything, but I'd like to follow up.
That works.
No. Hang on. We have news at 11.
10:36.
Hi, Commissioner Smith. This is Lindsay Mons, Business Manager in Customer Utilities. We actually had a project planned at our Lake Wenatchee plant for this year that would have been an O&M expense that was deferred to 2019.
Hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioners, Eric Walquist, I have objective 5G related to the implementation of the governance risk and compliance solution at the district. You'll see under G2 that by the end of the year, we did complete our metrics for that year with respect to that implementation. However, you'll see the red under item G1 because that first step of the compliance management implementation was completed after the deadline that we had established. And I think I've been elected to report for the benefit of all of the senior team on objective 5H, which is implementation of the business continuity plans. If you'll turn to page 17, I think I was elected because I'm the only one that's red. Everyone else is blue. So they have completed their plans for the year. Ours is red because it requires that we actually test that by the end of the year. And which means Rebecca, me, and Steve, frankly, did not complete our testing for this year. So we will be making that up as a matter for the first quarter of this year, if possible.
We're rescheduling to get that done.
So that puts me back at the front here. We're on bottom of page 17. And this was work we're doing with the data analytics platform, generation and transmission, and getting through phase two testing. And that work was completed. That was a stretch goal, too. So we made good progress on that one.
Okay, the next one is on page 18, item L, implement new bid workflow system. That was not completed by the end of the year. However, that is being implemented as we speak, and will be wrapped up first quarter 2019. I also have under N3, complete SIP low-impact physical security improvements by quarter four. That work was not completed at the end of the year. However, it is also being wrapped up currently. And the most obvious sign of that is the card readers that are being installed around the district at various facilities.
Justin Sipp? Sipp?
Yes, that is critical infrastructure protection, I believe.
Yeah.
Get that acronym right? Okay.
Commissioners, I have the next one under O, maintain and update utility service policies to be responsive to changing circumstances. We had a an objective to confirm or redefine growth pace for growth, consider system impact fees for funding substation expansion. That, again, as reported earlier, but due to the moratorium and large loads, has been deferred into 2019. I have the next one as well. This is a bit redundant since I've already reported on it, but we do have it in two places, and that was to update the annual fees and charges, and that was complete.
Commissioners, I'm on page 19, Objective P, items 1 and 2. 1D was the land mobile replacement system for the trunk radio, and the milestone was the infrastructure installed by Q4. That was complete. Microwave system, item number 2 there. Item D, the project completion by Q4, and that was also completed on time.
This is one you haven't heard about before, and we've got it complete, and it's an important one in terms of supporting our radio system. Really important from a safety perspective, too, for folks that are working out there in the field.
The next one under Q, the upgrade, the customer information system. We had a target to complete our project milestones through the end of the year, and we have done that.
Next one's 5R3, and that was to conduct our cybersecurity meetings across the enterprise to make sure we were coordinated on our cybersecurity efforts. That one was completed.
And the next item on that page under S is number 3, completing the fiber cybersecurity assessment feasibility, and we did complete that by 12-1.
Moving on to page 20, right near the top. We did conduct a vulnerability assessment on our wireless system this year, although it was scheduled to be completed in June, and we completed it in July, but with very good results. And then we also completed the employee awareness training and testing, which happens throughout the whole year. And I would like to take a moment to pause on that because this is where we're all trying to keep the awareness going on the emails of being careful when you're clicking on emails that are unfamiliar. That's one of our, you know, vulnerabilities for cybersecurity. And our click rate this year was 2.01%, and an industry average is 10%. And in addition, 693 employees never clicked on it. So those are really good improvements in showing that our employee awareness is up, and now the hard part is keeping the awareness up so we can be ever vigilant.
I am now reporting on items U. On 3 and 5, the 2019 HPI plans were developed and in collaboration with customer utilities, with fiber, and with generation and transmission. On item number 6, those were complete except for the communication strategy was not tested.
Item 6, I just lost you.
Sorry.
5.
U4.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
I did 3 and 5 together.
And then 2 from the bottom is our mobility computing of advancing our abilities there, and we are progressing but at a slower pace than originally scheduled.
And I've got the final one on page 20. It is related to mobile fleet management, and what we did was look at various systems that are out there. We were able to narrow it down to 2 preferred vendors, and so we're going to be taking a harder look on what it will take to actually implement a telematics system and what the IT needs would be there as well.
Then on page 21, the paperless boardroom implementation. So it's red because we didn't meet our 12-month deadline, but I see everyone with your devices, and hopefully it's running efficiently today as that was completed in January. And we'll continue to keep working on making sure it keeps getting better and better.
You should be into teaching old dogs new tricks.
And
thank you.
And now we're moving on to page 22 at the top. So objective 6A1, items C through E. We made support available for succession planning to supervisors throughout the year as they requested it. Moving on to B, items 1 and 2. Again, we completed those initiatives, and they were for a future-ready workforce, and they were well-received by managers, so we're very pleased with those results. Then moving on down to C2, we conducted lots of outreach, including setting up an external website so that, spouses or even dependents who are outside the district would be able to access the information that we had available with some videos, also mailing out cards, having lots of meetings, and so on. And we actually had about 200 employees change plans. So feel pretty good about having done that outreach, because obviously there's just a lot of inertia around that typically.
And just pause for a second to recall that we have a strategy to try to move people more towards the consumer-directed health plan. And so, Lorna, help me, the number last year before the 200 was roughly?
It was like 64.
Yeah, so it was a pretty big increase this year, and that's why the need for this outreach program.
Thank you. And then on item C4, where we were working to fill, hard to fill in new positions. Wait a second. We did not meet our metric on this one because we had the Equal Pay and Opportunities Act was surprisingly enacted in the middle of last year, and we had to reprioritize and try to become compliant with that law. So we made this one a lower priority. Moving on to page 23. Item D2, we did complete the second phase of the leadership coaching, but we have not completed the evaluation yet. That was postponed due to higher priority work. Data is being gathered, and we'll have an evaluation available shortly.
Let me jump in for one more moment on the recall that this year was the first year that we made coaches available to all members of leadership in the PUD. Voluntary, optional for them to choose whether to use it or not. And so that's the reason for the evaluation process, to take a look and see, is it being used and is it providing benefit?
And then on D5, this was to develop a leadership academy. We reprioritized some things and moved some staffing resources. So that was not completed due to higher priority work. We did, however, complete the discrimination and implicit bias training, and that was also delivered in Q4. And now moving down to E, 2 through 5, we delivered based on the reduced scope of the talent management initiative. And moving down to... Yes.
Say that again. I didn't get what that means.
Okay, so... notice up in E1, we were going to work with the senior management team to identify a talent management philosophy. That was a pretty big project that was going to take a fair amount of senior time. And so we worked with Steve to reduce the scope of that project a bit. And then these were the next steps that were going to flow out of that. And so we reduced the scope of that project and delivered on the reduced scope.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that takes us to the last item on this page, which is the targeted hiring. And we missed that by the 90% target by a little bit this year. We found that some hiring managers were making decisions to delay hiring, but they had already had their
justifications approved, and so we missed this target by a bit. But I do feel like it's important. I think that people around the district are feeling like they're getting the people they need in a relatively timely basis. Moving on now to page 24. And so in the safety metrics, again, I have to say that this year has been a better year on the safety metrics, which has been rightfully overshadowed by the fatality that we had this year. Then moving down to B2, we finalized delivery and testing of safety training content. Sorry, I'm not quite as ready on this one. C, we've been concerned about our diversity progress, and so we decided that we needed some metrics to pay attention to that. So we did develop and implement some metrics around this for this year. We also have been providing some reporting on close calls and safety concerns, but we're still working on trying to increase the reporting of those because we feel like there's not as much of that as there could be. And having those reported would give us more opportunity to improve those safety concerns or close calls and make it a safer place to work. And then we have developed the annual affirmative action plan and provided that information and sent the report in. Moving on to page 25. We've conducted, again, more outreach on diversity this year. So we do our annual veterans program. We do the Discover Us. We do Pizza Pop and Power Tools for young girls, working with SkillSource and WorkSource. And then looking at safety programs for regulatory compliance, we did find an external resource and conducted an audit of safety programs in an attorney-directed audit. We were then going to use that information to set some priorities and work plans, and we delayed that to both give priority to the accident investigation and then also to let the new person who is going to be in charge of that area have a voice in deciding those priorities in the work plan.
And the last one is mine, and that's that we have a commitment to pursue the accountability initiative through recognition for people who do a great job of displaying personal accountability, Cycle Personal Ownership Award. You've seen that here monthly, and we did accomplish that. So bottom line, we were tracking 280 items this year, completion rate of 65% that were done on time. If you add in the ones that were completed after the deadline, it adds another 23, brings us up to, I believe the number was 73%. I think it was 73%. The items that we didn't finish, we've addressed them with respect to whether they get rolled over into the 2019 performance plan.
Steve, I have a question also. On the report, it said that there was about 6% attributed to cryptocurrency that was interfering with completion. Mm-hmm. I wanted to point that out. That if you add the numbers up, that gets pretty darn close to over 80% of completion. So that's a good number.
That's right. I wouldn't say of completion, just that we did miss those as a conscious decision on the part of management and the board that cryptocurrency was going to have to be the priority that we hadn't anticipated when we put the performance plan in place.
I think that, for me, that quantifies the impact cryptocurrency had on staff and also on the board in 2018. Mm-hmm. It was fairly significant.
Yeah, I think that's right, although I would also say that I was a little surprised the number was only 6%. Sure felt like more than that in terms of its impact on the amount of time that we spent on it and impact on other initiatives. But directly related to specific performance targets that we identified, it was about 6%. Any other questions that you have about this? All right, if not, we're ready to move to the next agenda item, which is a legislative update. We're in the midst of the session, and so Sean Seaman will be bringing us up to speed on all the things that are going on in Olympia.
All the things?
Don't have time.
All the things. Yeah.
There's not that much time, Sean, right?
you don't want to know everything.
Tracy Hunt, Director of External Affairs.
It's Sean Seaman with External Affairs.
So what, Sean, about 2,000 bills? A mere 2,000 bills?
1,721 as of Friday.
So the good thing is most of them apply to us. Sean's excited about that part. So you have your regular legislative update for February 4, but we're going to spend a little more time looking at three, carbon, fire liability, and then capital budget. So... the current clean energy standard that's been promoted is looking at moving the state, which is already really clean, right? We're about 68% clean already, GHG-free, to an 80% standard. And then there's some goals, some timelines, 2025, 2044, et cetera. So we're monitoring a number of things in this legislation. But of all the things we're looking at, our real focus is what we're referring to as tax parity. Wind, solar, hydropower, there's a lot of gigawatts in the country, a lot of gigawatts around, and we're seeing some value in all of them being treated the same way. So tax parity, making sure that whatever incentives are available to other generation resources are also available to making sure that that 68% or that heavy hydro base that we have in the state of Washington stays there. We need that. So there are many, many, many details yet to work through. But if our interest with tax parity is coupled with provisions that protect markets, reliability, and overall costs, this legislation may lead to positive impacts for the district. But again, we'll have to wait and see what the details bear. So that is what I wanted to cover on carbon. Any questions on that? Okay. Fire liability. Eric and others at the PUD and the PUD Association did a lot of work getting ready for this session. There is a piece of legislation that's now roaming around Olympia. It's getting a lot of good support. In fact, the Commissioner of Public Lands, Commissioner of Department of Natural Resources, is supportive of this legislation, as are several utilities. It deals with setting up a task force with DNR and utilities to dig into issues around danger tree management, communication protocols, and the investigation process for fires. Like I said, it's got a lot of support, so we're going to monitor that closely. Moving on to capital budget. We've talked a lot about our participation on the Hydro Research Institute, and Kirk Hudson has been working to garner interest with higher education to perhaps seek some state funding. So we're looking at the capital budget, either expanding existing grant programs to include the Hydro Research Institute and or seeking some direct state funding. So as we look into that, we will and get more updates, we'll pass that along. And we're also monitoring closely the Peshastin funding. The additional funding request was rated number 2 on the overall list, sure, which is great news, great work to get that request in. And so it's up to Sean and I now to promote and make sure that that program gets funded enough so that the number 2 item on the list receives additional funding.
On that note, the capital budget, the draft budget, has $35 million in the fund for this particular pot of money, and at that rate, we clearly would be as number 2, even if we reduce that. Most of the money is going to get front-loaded in the first year of the biennium, so we're in good position as long as that amount stays anywhere near that, or even a little less would be fine for Peshastin funding.
Just a couple other things of note. We're back again with net metering. Those of you are familiar with the net metering, this is when our solar customers have their systems on their homes, and then we just net out the energy that they produce for themselves. There's some efforts across the state to raise the cap that the utilities currently have. We're at 0.5% or 1996. They want to go up to 4%. Pretty good support for that. Chelan County PD is not even close to our 0.5%, so raising the cap wouldn't have an impact on us, at least in the near future, well off into the future, more than likely. Moving on, the fuel mix disclosure report is one is where we report annually to our customers what is the makeup of the energy fuels used for our customers, which is predominantly hydro. This is mainly a bill to clean up some issues around the technical aspects, but also trying to deal with how they account for some other components of renewable energy credits and within the fuel mix disclosure. I won't get into the details. Our point is, with all the other issues going on with clean energy and how they're going to deal with these renewable energy credits or maybe other credits, just wait until that's done and then make the changes report, trying to get them to hold off on that. Electric vehicle, EV infrastructure, electric vehicle infrastructure incentives, bills that we talked about previously last year to just provide some clear authorities to PDs or BAC and other municipalities as well. Trying to make sure things are lined up correctly. They've had some bills that weren't quite the right bill, so there's a commitment by the legislators to change those to be the bills that we've talked about, the same language we've talked about in the past. Broadband access, there's the governor's bill that does many things, provides grants and loans as a primary issue to unserved and underserved areas. But of interest to Chelan PUD is to have a safe harbor provision in there. The current bill only has about a total of 6 months. It was Mike Coleman provided testimony at the hearing last week to ask for 12 months of a minimum time period with an opportunity for an extension. And so we're working with a sponsor to get amendment language into that bill right now.
Sean, yes. Is the oversight of the governor's office, new office, still as part of that those bills moving forward? And
yes, so I think the issue you're referring to, Commissioner, they would create a new office for the governor's office of broadband, would be in commerce, but the issue was some oversight of reviewing or applications. So that was an issue that was talked about at the Waputa meeting, and right now the bill has that. The Utilities and Transportation Commission would provide an overview and make recommendations to the Public Works Board that would actually be prioritizing the grants, the applications. So there's an effort right now and a recommendation to have an amendment that could create an expert panel as opposed to using the UTC. Oh. But we haven't got a sponsor. We're seeking sponsors for that as well. Hmm. So we'll see if that one makes it into a striking amendment bill. Is that the question or issue we're referring to? Bid limits is one that the PD Association has been working on over the last year, strongly over the interim. It's getting pretty good support. This would basically raise the current statutes, limits and statute to allow us to have do a few more projects, raise the limit from 150 to 300,000 materials costs, which then would allow PD crews to do a little more work on our system. But more importantly, it raises some other limits so we don't have to go get contracts. We can do purchases or have contracts or let work projects without having to go to contract. And it had pretty good support. There's numerous other bid limits or other authority bills related to unit price contracts out there between the cities and counties. And so they're looking at rolling all these into one omnibus bill that has pretty good support so far. So it's looking pretty good for that bid limits bill to move forward with the values we've been promoting. Finally, just under some ones of interest, you may have heard about the renewable hydrogen bill that's being promoted. This would allow PUDs to sell hydrogen. And the idea is they would generate hydrogen, a utility with excess capacity, energy capacity, generate hydrogen, and then have the authority to sell it. They could use it on their own for the fleet or generate, but this would give authority to sell hydrogen, which we don't have right now as PUDs. With that, I'll leave and see if there's any questions.
So the hydro not hydro, the hydrogen would be similar to Klickitat's.
Renewable natural gas.
Yeah, okay.
Correct. Same concept, authority to sell.
Okay, thanks.
I'd like to put an emphasis on, oh, I'm sorry, was there a question?
I should know this. So they're producing, so the only way I know to produce hydrogen is through electrolysis, but that's not what's going on. Is this a byproduct of the of what Dennis spoke of?
No, this would be actually using electricity in this case. If you had surplus electricity, maybe during the negative pricing, you would want to do something with that instead of spill water or sell into a negative market. You could use your electricity to generate hydrogen.
And how's that done?
I'm not really familiar with the technology, Commissioner. Sure, I'd happy to get back to you on that.
Okay. Yeah,
this is kind of a Douglas initiative.
Is it?
Yeah.
It must be electrolysis, but I mean, I don't know. I'll check with them. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just curious.
I want to put an emphasis on two of the issues that they spoke to because they've been high priorities for us. The clean energy bill, I think you will see more about this at the next board meeting. It's a review of the E3 study work that had been done. And the bottom line from that, from our perspective, was that something that's a renewable portfolio standard that doesn't include hydro, we perceive as not being particularly good for our customer owners, but not being good for consumers across the state. And as opposed to putting a price on carbon in the electric sector, providing more GHG emissions reduction at lower cost. What we've been trying to figure out is what is this bill? Not an RPS in one sense, because the previous RPS didn't include hydro, and this clearly hydro is included in the clean energy legislation. But a lot of the specifics on this kind of push it in one direction or the other. Is it closer to an RPS or closer to a price? And so there's an awful lot of work going in to try to understand the specifics and trying to determine, you know, is this something that works for us or not? A big part of that is what Tracy spoke to, the tax parity issue, where there is an existing tax exemption for non-hydro renewables, that there's a proposal to extend it, and we believe that it should be applied to hydro. In fact, that's our number one issue right now, is the extension of to hydropower for that provision, if it's going to be included in the bill as a whole. Second issue I want to raise is just the wildfire issue. As the issues have arisen around Pacific Gas and Electric, and it really started last year. Certainly it's hit national consciousness this year, but last year we've engaged with the State Department of Natural Resources, in particular Commissioner Hillary Franz, about we need to find a better way to think about wildfire risk and how we work together on issues where we have transmission distribution across state lands. That led to a meeting last week that I co-hosted with her, some really great work by Tracy to pull that together. We had a very energized community of people in Chelan County who are interested in wildfire issues. I think it was 25, 30 people that showed up, not just to listen, but they came prepared to engage. It was a good opportunity to be able to talk about those. It also was an opportunity to build stronger relationship with DNR. And so far, I think it appears that what we have is an alignment with them on specifics around legislative language that we've talked about before, that Eric was a big part of drafting, that would establish a process and procedure for us, for the utility community, to work with DNR about policies that affect wildfire liability risk for electric utilities. So it's not a resolution of the issue. It's a commitment to working together, collaborative process to working together. DNR has signed in on this legislation supportive of the provisions. So we've got a good basis for working together. I'm not going to tell you we have solutions ready to go right now, but at least a good basis for working together that I think will help us and hopefully avoid the kind of problems that they have in California.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what we'd like to do next is move to agenda item 5. We do have the rollout of our strategic planning process with the Strategy Partners Group scheduled for Thursday of this week. Expect all of our commissioners to be there for that meeting. But what will happen at that is in the first 45 minutes or so of the meeting will be a presentation which you have seen before. It's the presentation that we've been giving around the county to describing the overall setup for strategic planning, a review of what we did with the last strategic plan, the three strategic priorities, how we're doing against those, the overall status of the utility, and the six questions that we think are the ones that we believe are the most important. We will then do breakout groups into the six topic teams, and that material you have not seen before, so we want to give you a chance to see it before it shows up on Thursday. So we're going to walk through these one by one. We'll warn you that the expectation is these presentations take 20 to 30 minutes. We won't be able to go through all of that, but there's a fair amount of this material that you've seen before. So we're going to be trying to keep it to the 5 to 10-minute range here, which means we'll be moving through and not describing every page of material that will be presented on Thursday. We're going to start with the aesthetics group. John Stoll will be presenting that.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll again, Managing Director of Customer Utilities, and I will try and jog through this. So this one's a little bit different from the other questions and from the standpoint we've already had kind of a community engagement, a topic team over the last year around this issue. So we're really kind of focusing on a survey with this question. So the question is around aesthetics and primarily the undergrounding of overhead lines. So kind of the setup question is who pays for these improvements, when it can increase costs 2 to 10 times. All customer owners or those who benefit. And again, we want to make the distinction that this is for distribution and not transmission lines. The overview of this presentation is some background, our current policy as it exists today, where we do our own PUD funded conversions. Why are we doing the survey? I want to spend a little bit of time on the survey questions themselves. They are draft and they're subject to further work, but it'll give you a sense of the questions we would ask and then the next steps. This is just an overview of our electric system to kind of describe it to folks who may not be as familiar. Our system's really kind of split into two, almost equal from overhead to underground as it stands today. You may have seen this slide before. This is it's a little bit dated, but it was from a very thorough survey completed by North Carolina after one of the major hurricanes or an ice storm that went through there, and there was a lot of discussion about undergrounding. So this gives you some general statistics when you compare not only cost, ongoing maintenance, but even reliability and life expectancy. So right now our current practice, you know, we replace like for like in most situations. Construction of new lines overhead really depends on the situation. It's pretty straightforward when we have new developments and short flats and things of that nature. Most jurisdictions require that that is put in underground, and developers do that, and then we put in the wire and the terminations and connect up the system. Some of the recent activity through like connecting up substations, again, we'll look at the general area and how it fits in best. We have had for a number of years a facility modification policy, and really, as I've stated here in its simplest terms, it's just the option to pay for the cost difference if we were going to go in and do a planned replacement, and then a customer or those who would benefit would get together and pay for that differential. It has been quite popular. It went in a little over 10 years ago. These numbers have probably increased, but a little over 150 customers have taken advantage of this. The average cost is $10,000 thereabouts. So, but keep in mind, this is really useful for small, usually segments, spans. It could be crossing somebody's field or property, and they may have development plans and wish to underground it outside of us doing anything. So, again, it's been a pretty popular program for customers to utilize. When we get into larger projects, we do have some constraints from right-of-way issues, lack of easements, or just lack of available real estate when you look at an underground system. There's the pole attachments that are provided. Just general feasibility is where as well. So I'll touch on this a little bit, but the conversions definitely have their challenges when you're talking larger feeders along county and city or state highways. This is just an example. When you take all that overhead infrastructure and you need to find a place to put it, it generally takes up space on the ground and some of our roadways and whatnot. you're looking at expanding out and seeking easements to site that infrastructure. There are times when we will look at an overhead line, and we will look at it, is it in the best interest of the district to underground that? And we do run into this. It could be just from an operational efficiency. Is it a line that runs through an area that's really hard to access? As Steve has mentioned earlier, just some of the fire issues. Is it a way to mitigate a potential fire issue, just the general tree cover? Does it enhance reliability? So there are circumstances. We do that ourselves. So this is really kind of the question why we're asking. This is part of a survey. Commissioners, you've heard this, that, you know, there has been requests to underground, a lot of it around aesthetics, placing the overhead underground. And in those situations, that should be socialized or spread throughout our customer base and paid for all. Naturally, that's a pretty big change, pretty big magnitude in the impact it would have on potential rates and what they would look like in the future. So what we want to do is get more of our customer sense of that. As I mentioned earlier, these are draft. We're still working it through it. We have a consultant that we've hired that has done some really good work around surveys, and we're working with them to fine-tune these questions. But again, this will give you a sense of what we'll be asking. You know, we've asked something similar in the last customer satisfaction survey, but just general favorability about undergrounding. Do they have an interest? Do they, if it impacted their rates? No. If it's directly benefited to those who benefit, they should pay. Things of that nature. This is probably the key question right here. When you look into this, if somebody is in favor of undergrounding for aesthetics or other reasons, if there was an impact to rates, what would be their appetite for that? Again, we're still working on what that scale would be. The example is our average residential bill is about $50 a month. Now, we know that scales depending upon the time of year, but across the board, it's about $50. So given that background, what would be the acceptance level to work into rates. Just quick math on that. If it was at the maximum, if we use $10, that would generate about $6 million a year in revenue. Each conversion would be its own unique entity, just from some of the challenges around it, but we roughly use a rule of thumb of about $1 million a mile. So at $6 million a year revenue, that'd be 4 to 7 miles of conversion. Again, that's just a general rule of thumb.
John, may I jump in here? So I was reading and I wasn't really listening, I admit. So how would we generate $6 million in revenue?
If there was a funding mechanism and we increased as part of our rates a mechanism to charge, say, an additional $10 for the purpose of undergrounding, doing those conversions.
Per customer.
And if you just took the 50,000 customer figure and, multiplied that by 12 bills.
Okay.
You come up with the 6 million. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's pretty general rule of thumb, but it just gives you a magnitude.
Yeah. People are always asking for that.
Put that in relationship to our roughly $50 million a year of revenue that we get from our retail customers, you can see that that's a plus 10% increase just by itself.
So I have a question with respect to, has anyone calculated or given thought to a recapture rate? So let's assume this became wildly popular and that it was implemented throughout the county. And so instead of that $6 million estimated underground cost, the number ballooned to a much larger number. The recapture rate, like car loans, if you recapture it over 100 years, you can charge a small amount. But if you want to recapture that over a specific period of time, the dollar amount tacked on to your monthly bill becomes larger. So has anyone given thought to, well, if we implement this, what would a recapture rate look like? Because that $10 might really be a very small number if this was adapted throughout the entire county.
Yeah, it's, I've looked into this. City of San Diego is probably a pretty good case example. They put in a goal to underground the entire city. And so through it's an investor-owned utility, San Diego Gas and Electric, they do a surcharge. They you know, they're, again, they're putting money aside, but I think it's about an 80-year plan to work through their city. And I think that creates a little bit of consternation, because if you've been paying for that, and if you're at the end of the 80 years, again, there's some really interesting articles of just what City of San Diego is working through.
Thank you. John had mentioned that we're still doing some work on these survey questions. One of them is trying to capture this dollar number correctly, make sure that when somebody says, where did you come up with that, is it a reasonable estimate of what the range of costs can be? So we've got some more work to do there.
John, any chance you could bring up that article about the San Diego?
Sure, yeah. I think I've got some links saved, and I can send them out.
That'd be great.
This last question, this one, I don't know if it'll make it to the final version, but cities do have the opportunity to do, again, like City of San Diego, for example, to do a local improvement district, things of that nature. That's an option. If a city was really interested in doing something, you know, there's ways that, you know, we could work with the city as part of a recapturing from their perspective. Again, we're not sure if this question will make the survey, but it's just another offshoot of that.
John, I really like the idea of asking people, what's your appetite? What would you be willing to pay, if, you know, on a monthly basis? Because it's really telling, you know, when people think it's a good idea to do this, but then when it really comes down to what I'm going to be paying, what I'm willing to be paying each month, school districts have moved to that method of what's your appetite, what are you willing, what's affordable, and I think it's really responsible. It gives people the ability to communicate with us on, I'm willing to move to this level to pay my fair share. And I think that's a really responsible way to do this. And so I appreciate that.
Okay.
I think it works well.
So in conclusion, just kind of the next steps as we see it, we're still working on this, but the goal is to get this survey out in the field probably the back half of February, later February, get those results in. And would anticipate presenting those results at the end of March. So the timing works out with strategic planning, as well as what you'll hear from Kelly when we're looking at long-term just revenue rate design issues as well. So having this information will be helpful.
Yeah, so are we going to have a topic team that's related to aesthetics to this issue?
Not at this point. Just from, you know, we had a topic team that we, I believe it was late spring, we initiated it, worked through summer. It was a diverse group, and we kind of went through this at a much larger scale, kind of came through it. And you may recall, I think it was probably September, October, we had a report out of that group and recommended doing something through strategic planning, most likely a survey. So that's where we stand right now.
Was Wendy Eisenhardt a part of that group? Do you remember?
No, I don't believe so.
She's offered, well, Shalan, you know, is gung-ho on this issue, but she's one that's offered to be a part of a group, be part of strategic planning to help with this issue.
Okay. The meeting's this Thursday, and I think if she's willing to come down, she'll have an opportunity to hear this and go to this breakout where this will be presented.
And she's definitely on the list, because I know she gave our name to Justin and to me at that meeting.
Council meeting.
She'll have an invitation for that
meeting. Oh, good. She will. Good. Thanks.
And I just add that we plan to, when we get to the draft final, we're planning to run those survey questions by the board to get a sense of what it is they're asking and see if you've got any thoughts about it.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Okay, next up, early action. Justin will be presenting on this.
All right, good morning. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. My name is on this presentation because I'm here before you this morning, but I have team members, which include Tracy Yant and Michelle Smith. So I wanted to acknowledge them. They've been on this journey with me. I've got a lengthy presentation here, which means I'm going to go through it really quickly. So I'll just pause on a couple of key slides to digress further. In terms of setup, early action, the kind of the key components of the strategic question before us are, shall the district pursue early action? And if so,
what actions should be pursued, and then what does the district get in return in its pursuit. So that's what we'll be tackling through this process as we journey with the topic team. So we are going to use the traditional topic team process. We will, on Thursday, go through some background on the project, on the Rock Island project, talk about early action, go through the FERC relicensing process, and maybe how this differs or this opportunity provides some benefit, and then wrap up talking about the overall our overall planning approach and next steps. I will skip through a couple of slides here. Talk through the licensing process, term, early action, and how it's evolved from a policy to law, and how we're working with FERC now as we may be one of the first or the first entities to be able to formally go through the process. I know you've been hearing about early action for quite some time, so I won't elaborate further. I'm actually going to cite portions of the law. And then spend some time talking about why this is potentially good for customer owners, talk about the potential to lengthen the license term, the benefits that customer owners could see in terms of since these actions would occur in advance, there'd be benefit there, particularly as you think about things like recreation, environmental and cultural improvements. Talk about the big bucket of investment, of what investments include. See that list there. And we really also think this provides an opportunity to build consensus, community support for the relicensing process in addition to just the early action element. Go through the current status. I already mentioned that we just had a great conversation with FERC last week, and they appear to really want to work with us collaboratively. And so we do believe we'll be the first and one of the first to use this process. I already mentioned the key questions. So we've got some details that we'll go over on the Rock Island project specifically. You all are very familiar with this, so I will skip through these slides. I want to talk about some current investments in the recent past or current time and the immediate future related to power plant upgrades. Talk about the project boundary. We'll have some handouts and some other visuals on hand so that people kind of understand the scope of the project. And if we are to consider early actions, those early actions need to have a nexus to the project. I want to provide them with the timeline so they kind of understand what a typical relicensing process takes. Understandably, there's going to be some members of the public that probably don't fully grasp the complicated nature and the extensive time periods involved with this process. So I want to bring all this into context so that they have that as they consider early actions. We're going to dive a little deeper into the early action examples. So these current infrastructure improvements could be a early action that we request formal consideration from FERC for. So we'll dive a little deeper here into Powerhouse 1 and Powerhouse 2 and those associated costs. Also talk about the habitat conservation plans and what we've done relative to our HCPs and our stewardship related to environmental conservation. Part of the plan with these two slides is to indicate that when you look at those powerhouse impacts, investments, and these investments, you see that we're talking literally hundreds of millions of dollars, which when you consider the concept of early action, that alone may get us to a longer license term of 50 years. And so we want to maybe kind of talk about some sideboards for early action options because we are making so many substantial investments already. You've seen the overall time frame previously. Just want to educate our topic team on that. And then I'll pause here on desired outcomes. Some of these I've mentioned, but Certainly, this provides a great opportunity to provide community consensus and education about relicensing and early action. Also can identify criteria by which the district should consider early actions. Understand the key issues and trade-offs. And we're hopeful, too, that we may actually, through this process, be able to develop an early action project list that is reflective of the above consideration and that we can then present to you as part of the final strategic plan. And as with previous topic team endeavors, a summary report will be issued towards the end of the process. We lay out a meeting schedule. We envision at least three topic team meetings, two on the front end with an optional meeting, depending upon how the process evolves. And then we'll do a final kind of wrap-up meeting towards the end of the process after we've done the topic team, done those first two meetings, potentially a third, and then gone out to the public with this all-household mailer and engagement opportunities similar to what was done last time. So wanted to provide an opportunity at the end to bring the team back together. And just we will finish with a few team logistics, make sure we have all the right people in the room. And if we don't, then we'll talk about how we add them to the team and get them up to speed as we hold our future meetings. It's a really quick outline, but I wanted to stay on track. Are there any questions or concerns you have with our approach?
I have a question here.
Yes, sir.
Sort of hard to get my arms around this question, but what you're talking about here is maybe one of the biggest things we do as a commission in the next 50 years. So it's really important we get it right. And I'm wondering if I have enough information right now about what constitutes a nexus to Rock Island, what past lists of projects have looked like. So it expands my mind and gives me a frame of reference to start my thought process. So, I mean, this is a biggie to me. It really is. And so if any help you can provide me as a commissioner, and I don't know how the other commissioners feel about their need for more information, but this one's a biggie.
I appreciate that comment, and absolutely, we'll give that some more thought as a team and put some materials together for the group. One of the things we were hoping to do in this process on Thursday as well was talk about the experience with Rocky Reach relicensing so that the public that's present can kind of understand what, through the settlement agreement, what those requirements were, and so they have kind of a general sense of what the types and the scope of the requirements.
If there are no other questions, we'll move on to the next one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
So the next one is the public power benefit. Mike Coleman's going to be presenting.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom, and I have the privilege of leading, facilitating the public power benefit topic team. There's a tremendous amount of this presentation that's already going to be familiar to you, so I'm going to just move through it very, very quickly and then get to the real heart of it towards the end. We're going to go back and make sure everybody's on a level playing field and describe what is our public power benefit program and how it came to be and the fact that we are still living by our guiding principle of to deliver the best value for the most people for the longest period of time. Talk about why did we offer the program. And then take them back to the information at the last strategic plan, particularly the financial outlook that was available to us in that particular time frame. And that's going to come up to be highlighted later that there's now a slightly different look at our financial picture in the next strategic plan period.
I can add to that for a second, as especially Commissioner McKenna and Arsenault were not here for the last strategic plan, just to say what we were looking at was this picture that said we could be in great financial shape or we might be in lousy financial shape, and we don't know which it's going to be. So you had to develop a strategic plan that contemplated both of those scenarios. The bad financial shape was, well, let's reduce our debt because that puts us in better shape there. If we're going to be in good financial shape, we should have a way to invest some of those dollars in the county consistent with the statutory nexus. Mm-hmm. So the public power benefit was really the balance point to the debt reduction program. And so now we face a little bit different financial position, and we've got to reevaluate relative to our financial position that fundamental of what future are we planning for.
Mm-hmm. I may ask Steve to come deliver that talk at the breakout session. Specifically, we talk about the board philosophy that was behind the PPB at the last plan, and the details of what we had to consider entering into the PPB program then. Also use a quote from that time frame, which says that we're going to do it very slowly, very carefully, and take into consideration the impacts to our customer owners. And then talk about what we did with the previous PPB program, 2015 through 2019, the monies that were approved, what has been allocated, and the fact that there are some projects that are still underway. We're going to highlight the completed projects and some of the ongoing projects, both the parks, the fiber, the EV charging stations, the improvements at the Plain site, and then the Hydro Research Institute. We're also going to talk necessarily of the program limitations, both the statutory limitations and the financial outlooks that we're now looking at, which are less favorable than they were 5 years ago, but they're still very, very good. We're financially sound. A new liquidity forecast, which kind of highlights the difference between the original slide from 5 years ago and what we're looking at and contemplating now.
I'll pause on this because that's not something we've shown the board before.
Okay. And,
if you could go back for a second, Mike. So the bottom two lines there, the low forecast and the expected forecast, are what you have seen that's been in the strategic planning material that we released. Mm-hmm. The high forecast is basically the using our existing analysis for what might happen if prices go up, just showing that, in fact, in that circumstance, we're back to being in really good shape again. So we face a similar but not the same circumstance that we did in 2015, and that we can have the land of poverty and the land of plenty, and both of them are possibilities for our future.
Okay.
However, doesn't the expected scenario look different?
Yeah, it's
the expected scenario is trending down, and before our expected scenario was at least stable or moving up, wasn't it?
Yeah, the liquidity forecast from the from 2015, the expected value forecast was that we were above the minimum liquidity target in all years,
mm-hmm.
with basically just no action. There was enough revenue in the wholesale market that it helped to offset the cost increases that we anticipated across the system. And now we don't have that. You know,
right.
Now you have lower wholesale revenues, and so we're now into a need to borrow. Although, even with our current expected forecast, we still think we can achieve our 35% debt-to-equity ratio out for many years. So it's not that we're in terrible shape. I don't want to beat that impression.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, we're sort of in a normal utilities position, which is most utilities do borrow for their capital program. This has been an unusual utility that has been cash financing its entire capital program.
Steve, is the low revenue scenario on the slide the same low revenue scenario of the previous forecast?
Not the same as the 2015. So this is completely updated for the actuals. So first of all, the crossover point is later than what was shown in the 2014 because we've had a number of good years, and so that's pushed us into better shape. And then everything is updated. The costs are updated. The revenues are updated for today's circumstances.
So So there are four questions for this topic team, and the first one is, should Chelan PUD continue to fund a public power benefit program? That's question number one, and if they say no, then the other questions kind of become moot. No expectation of hearing a no, but you really have to go through the process and understand what's on their mind. If the answer is yes, then what activities should be considered for funding? And next, how should these activities be prioritized, both categorized and prioritized? Should we prioritize economic development or recreation or one of the other many categories? The last question is, should Chelan PUD revise or refine the criteria for funding public power benefit activities? Our last criteria was based on what we knew in 2015, and now, considering that we may be using debt in the future, how do we revise or refine that criteria to take all of that into account?
We had two things to that one. We solicited for ideas in both the original strategic planning process and then the first turned out to be the first year under the strategic plan. Those ideas we still have, so we're not saying you have to submit them again. So we're not trying to recreate the wheel here. What we are trying to do is say there hasn't been an opportunity for people to express a view since 2016, I believe it is, as to what things that they might want us to consider for public power benefits. So we're going to make sure there's that opportunity to update for new things that people might have thought of since then. Again, trying to connect up with the statutory nexus. Second point, with respect to the funding criteria today would say if we are borrowing money that we should not have a public power benefit program. I think that was as we were trying to get to our debt to equity ratio, we didn't want to undercut that goal. Now that we've achieved that, it's time to revisit and say, so where do we want to be now, given that we have essentially mission accomplished with respect to debt reduction. Not seeking to go above 35%, certainly, but at least currently we're forecasting that we would stay below that in our expected value case.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
Uh-huh.
There's another question that I don't – not necessarily a question, but we don't want to get lost in this process, is whether or not we have a public power benefit, it seems to me should our need to borrow money – going forward as a utility at some moment in time is going to be there, it's going to be real at some moment in time. And is that a criteria we want to have to use as to whether or not we have a public power benefit program? I don't happen to think it is.
So I think that's exactly right. The way we try to tee that up is a question, both for the public and for the board, to think about how we would revisit those criteria and what we want the criteria to be. And certainly there'll be lots of opportunity for the public to provide a view on that and ultimately for the board to make a choice.
Okay.
Helpful to have your input, though. We appreciate that. And, you know, if you've got perspectives on it along the way, it helps us to think about how to formulate these questions.
So the next steps for the PPB topic team, we're still finalizing the exact members that are on this team. And, of course, we don't know what kind of volunteers we'll get at the initial session, the kickoff session. I would say here that if you have some recommendations for an individual to be on this team, I would be more than happy to take it and get into contact with them. We're planning on up to three meetings. We laid all of them out currently. The initial meeting should determine if the PPB program should continue and then go into discussing the criteria for the PPB program funding and project selection and then finalize the program criteria. So there's a little bit of a twist here, and the logic was we need to complete this step before we go out for any public outreach, and the public outreach that we will be doing will be tied in with the overall strategic planning and the outreach there, but particularly using social media, email, website, any strategic planning newsletters or cards that go out to the public. Any questions?
I think just kind of going off of Randy's statement, what jumped out at me is I always look for opportunities, which you've taken advantage of with the vision statement of the most for the longest, et cetera. But bring in the mission statement. I think anytime we can bring in the mission statement of quality of improving the quality of life
right.
would be helpful. I'd like to see that.
I can add that. Thank you.
Mike, I have a few names in mind that I'll get back to you on.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, last Mike. Up, rates. So Kelly and John. Looks like Kelly's going to do the presentation today. So John's already done one. He's done for the day.
So just a comment as they're getting set up. I didn't realize it would take two senior managers to do this presentation.
So John and I are partnering on this one as we both lead these areas. To give you some perspective on that, John's group administers and does the customer service piece of rates, and our group does kind of the calculations behind the scenes and cost of service analysis, rate design impacts. So I'm happy to be partnering with John on developing these long-term rate plans.
Obviously, my comment was tongue-in-cheek, and this is really important, so I'm glad we've got two good people on it.
Thanks. And the strategic question around long-term rate planning, we've actually even been evolving just while planning for strategic planning of what really is the area of focus. After 7 years without rate increases, strategic planning is just the right time to develop a longer-term look for all electric, water, wastewater, and fiber, so that we can have those long-term rates, those long-term plans in place. And really the ultimate, I think, goal is to, whatever we do, to be very measured, deliberate, small, incremental, planned in advance, so that we can avoid the need for any large spikes in rates should financial outcomes be in that lousy scenario that Steve described. And along with that also goes, the idea about how do we display our rates on bills, because right now we have a net rate, and it's not as easy to understand that some of the rate cost of service is offset by wholesale electric rates. So thinking about questions like that of better ways to present for better customer understanding. And just the rate design piece of it, too, our customer characteristics are changing. And so how we need to design our rates to be responsive to that is also changing. And then another element is just for water, wastewater, and fiber. Through the last strategic planning, we identified community support and a need for capital in those systems to be supported through cash reserves other than rates for those systems, as at the same time balancing with long-term rate plans for those. And so now's the time to reconfirm if that's still the community perspective and extend those plans. So we're going to be taking a lot of kind of rate-related perspectives and philosophies into consideration to get community perspective and feedback on those. And I think I'll use this instead. And I think a really natural question out of all of this will be, why now? It has been 7 years. What is it about now that is making this be a timely topic? And a lot of this is really driven by the change of the face of our customers, and that we need to have rates in place before there's a lot of the customers in these unique areas so that we could be ready to go and ready to serve them. And just a couple examples include electric vehicles and secondary homes or seasonal homes. Both of those customer types have really unique characteristics. And I think we've learned, this is my cryptocurrency picture down here. I think we've really learned a lot from the cryptocurrency example that there's unique rate design that's needed to be responsive to unique characteristics of each customer class. And so we will be working on that through this topic team.
Kelly, can you go back to that previous slide? Just a question about the off-peak, on-peak chart, little graphic that you have there. Is that Chelan County? Is that what that depicts?
What this is really demonstrating is industry changes.
Which slide are you on?
Why now? Slide.
Wow, I guess I don't have a number on that slide. So thank you for pointing that out. I have to make sure we have slide numbers on that.
That would be the first why now.
Slide 90.
Slide 90.
So it's five. Slide five.
All right.
And it just has the pictures of different customer types on it. And right in the middle is the picture of a kind of peak and off-peak and on-peak rates. And that's really reflecting a industry change where the industry is evolving to be responsive so that customers can choose usage times. I think what we will learn over time is that some of the technology that's needed to do this type of rate is the two-way metering. And so it might just put it into perspective of the speed of which we could be responsive to this type of need. So thank you for asking. And after, as I mentioned, after 7 years of holding rates steady, at that same time, we've experienced a lot of customer growth, which drives a lot of need for infrastructure investments to serve that increased load, also to take care of some of the assets that are aging along that time. And we've increased our overall investments a lot over this period of time. So while one is steady, the others are advancing. And so it really makes this a timely question now to be responsive along the way. So really, this is actually just the right time to be talking about these long-term plans, again, to have them in advance ahead of the need and making sure that we can be planned, steady, small over time and avoid, should we have an unusual financial outcome, that we can avoid the need for large rate spikes. So I have some of the background information that we'll share. We'll really try to show that picture of rates holding steady over a long period of time, investments in plant and operations increasing during that same time and expected to increase even more in the future as we meet our infrastructure needs. And then at the same time, our two components that we use to cover the cost of service for electric is both rate revenue and wholesale electric revenue. And the wholesale electric revenue has been declining during that period of time. Lots of moving parts in that, not just the wholesale electric market rates, but also as we use more to meet our increasing local load, then there's less to sell in the wholesale markets. And we think that will stay moderate over time. So another way of looking into the future for our long-term planning. And this is the same graphic that Mike showed also, because we're all trying to anchor to these same concepts of our expected case does bring us into a borrowing scenario in this planning horizon as we fall below our liquidity levels. And that low revenue scenario would bring us there sooner. So how do we want to plan for that scenario? But then balance with the better than expected outcomes. Also are very moderate and show that it would be pretty stable. So again, we have a lot to balance, but the purpose of the long-term planning is to be ahead of the situation should this low revenue scenario be what we experience? And so some of the preliminary thoughts that we have in this area are that for the electric system, both the changing of customer characteristics and the increase in our investments both have us focusing on the need for a long-term rate plan. And then for water, wastewater, and fiber, it's twofold. We want to extend the current long-term plans that are in place that balanced rate increases for those systems with the need for support on capital funding and really touch base again to ensure that the feedback we received last time was that the community really valued these essential services and were willing to invest in the capital for these services through other than the rates for those systems. So we need to do a check-in and see if that's still the community perspective and have that balanced approach to both capital and rates for those systems. So we will do work in both those areas, including kind of the background that fiber rates are a little bit different because it's a wholesale service we provide. We provide the fiber to the service providers, not the ultimate customer. So that makes fiber just a little bit different, too, as we manage how we look at rates in that area.
So, Kelly, on that last slide, under the preliminary planning conclusion, capital funding support is still consistent with community feedback. What group or groups are we reaching out to make that determination? If it's, are we going back to perhaps the group or groups that we met with before and asking the same people the same questions, or are we looking at a different demographic?
I think you'll find that we're going to do similar to what we did through the last process, and that's use a whole bunch of different ways to reach out and get feedback. The topic team is one of those mechanisms, and you know, we'll see what kind of volunteers we get through the kickoff meeting. We want to outreach to people who may not have a volunteer, but to try to get that broad perspective and participation. But also, I think we'll be using a lot of different social media outlets to get information. Some of the survey questions that we do give us information. That outreach at the end, kind of pulling it all together of what do you value, some sort of interactive, I think, exercise like we did last time will help prioritize on those. So I think the answer to your question is we're going to be trying a lot of different ways to ensure that we get broad perspective in these areas, all of them.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
So really, those are what we want to focus on, doing it through the topic team method as one of those methods. We will rely on the customer survey also to inform the topic team. So this one will start a little bit later in the process where we anticipate doing a lot of the work at the end of April or end of March and through April with our intention of having a deliverable at the end of April with kind of the gathering of the opinions, considerations, perspectives. Obvious hard part about this one is we're not asking that straightforward question of do you want a rate increase, because nobody wants that. It's more about that perspective on what's the right prudent plan to have a balanced long-term plan and what kind of factors should be considered in that. And it's also really important to recognize how interrelated this is with the rest of the questions we would be asking also and working on, because aesthetics, growth paying for growth, how do we balance our wholesale sales with our local load, all of those ultimately impact rates, rate structures, cost of service. So we will be trying to balance all of those perspectives in the work on a long-term rate planning. And it's really about that vision and that long-term balance. And we're really hoping somebody will want to be on our team. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
I will admit to being a bit amazed. I think this is the first time that in a long time that our regular agenda ended right around noon.
Yes.
So, I think we are done with what we had planned to prepare or present for this morning.
Okay. Well, then with that, we will recess for lunch and begin our business session at 1 p.m. where we will take up the topic of a public hearing on rate schedule 4. We are. Good afternoon. Welcome to the February 4th, 2019 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices that you may have with you. We place great value on public input, and since these meetings are recorded, if you wish to address any item on the agenda, please step forward to the microphone, state your name, your address, and please limit your comments to no more than 3 minutes. So the next step on our agenda would be the public hearing for rate schedule number 4.
I want to invite Lindsay Mons up. The board will recall that we discussed this issue at the last board meeting. This is the formal public hearing on that. Lindsay will introduce the subject present to the public.
Thank you, Steve. Lindsay Mons, Business Manager in Customer Utilities. As Steve mentioned, we talked extensively about this at your last board meeting, covered proposed changes and information related thereto. Today, we'll talk a little bit more about summarize staff's recommendation and have that public hearing. This agenda slide is really both an agenda and a peek into our next steps proposal. So today we'll take care of these input boxes here, the summary of feedback, staff recommendation, and the public hearing that would go into board's consideration of a rate schedule adoption. And then following that, consideration of a future contract. Those we would propose to happen at the next board meeting, so not today. Give a little time for thought and additional feedback if we get it. So staff's recommendation would be to revise our existing Schedule 4, which currently is in place for loads over 5 average megawatts, and allow for negotiated energy and delivery charges within Schedule 4 contracts, update the market-derived service charges that are included therein. As we talked last time, those are over 15 years old, so it's time to bring them to current and to expand that availability of the Schedule 4 to other circumstances. As we spoke before, there are no customers currently on this rate schedule, so any changes to what's currently included within that, say the market drive service charges, those don't affect any current customers. They would be considerations for future customers. And we do have one potential new customer that has expressed interest in a Schedule 4 contract. Within those Schedule 4 contracts would include an energy rate and delivery rates, as well as services. So this is listed are a variety of the type of services, so load following, load shaping, imbalance, those types of things, really that would make up a small portion of the customer's bill, so really an exception-based type charge. And then also terms and conditions of use. As far as summary of feedback goes, we've not received any. We did publish notice in the newspapers. We did media outreach, posted on our website, kind of all of our normal approaches there, and I also reached out to any customers or other individuals in the public who have expressed interest in our Schedule 4 in the past and invited them to today's meeting. So at that, I'll take any questions from the board and then turn it over to you.
Any questions?
No.
I like the appendix. That's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. That includes the information that we covered last time around.
Mm-hmm. We'll say we've been continuing to work on the Diamond Foundry contract and hope that that will be available soon. We intend to make that available for public comment as well. That is directly connected to what we're talking about here.
They anticipate being above 5 megawatts?
Yes.
I didn't. I thought they were just below. I didn't know.
It might take a moment just to describe why we need to take this action. So the HDL rate is a cost-based rate. The crypto rate is a market-based rate, and we did a lot of work figuring out particularly the ancillary services charges for a crypto rate. So what we have now is, I think the HDL rate really didn't anticipate that we would get much in terms of above 5 megawatt loads. So what we're really doing is taking that cost of production rate, but all of these ancillary services we likely will have to buy from the market to be able to serve it. And so we're, in effect, creating an opportunity to graft on the ancillary services rate that we developed for crypto and be able to use it with an HDL load, which above 5 megawatts. And, again, we are creating flexibility for the commission to determine whether that should be a cost-based rate, the energy component should be a cost-based rate or a market-based rate.
Well, it's good to see that a lot of the effort and legwork that went into developing the HDL rate has been able to be piggybacked on and create that efficiency to arrive at the Schedule 4.
Yeah, I would say one of the things about going through the cryptocurrency discussion is we learned a lot. We learned a lot about our system, you know, particularly transmission. We learned a lot about rate structure. And so while it's unclear how much crypto rate will load we'll actually end up with, we still have gotten value out of that process.
So be ready for public comment.
Yes.
So let's open this up to public comment. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to make comment? Okay. Well, hearing none.
So, commissioners, that would wrap the public hearing unless there's anything else to do on our rate-setting resolution. And then I think the proposal would be that we would bring back the actual rate adoption resolution for consideration at the next board meeting, all things even.
That is correct. So our proposed next steps would be on February 19th to bring forward the proposed resolution, as well as consideration of the contract. And we do, as Steve mentioned, plan to have our goal is to have that contract, our final proposed draft, ready for you this week.
Commissioners, no additional comment? Okay.
All right.
Very good. Lindsay, thank you.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Good presentation.
I like they're getting shorter and shorter.
Well, you're just doing a better job every time. Okay. Well, commissioners, we have in front of us a consent agenda. Is there a motion to accept our consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the consent agenda as presented with the inclusion of items 9 and 10.
Is there a second?
Second the motion.
Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, let's move on into the regular agenda. Steve, would you like to take over here?
I would. So agenda item 11 is a resolution authorizing the issuance of a second contract to Lydic Construction Incorporated of Spokane Valley, Washington, to provide general contractor construction manager GCCM services for the Rocky Reach Hydroelectric Support Facility Improvement Project. We've got Casey Hill.
Good morning, or afternoon. Casey Hall, project manager for the Rocky Reach Central Maintenance Facility Upgrade Project. So as Steve had introduced, resolution number 18-14257 authorized the district to enter into a contract with Lydic Construction for general contractor construction manager services for Rock Island and the Rocky Reach Central Maintenance Facilities and Hydro Projects Upgrade Projects. The scope of these services included pre-construction services during the design phase, and ultimately a negotiated guaranteed maximum price to complete all construction work for each of these facilities. So the Rocky Reach project team has completed pre-design for the sports facilities at Rocky Reach with our lead architect, TCF Architecture, and we're ready to start on design for construction. So this resolution requests the district be allowed to contract again with Lydig Construction for a not-to-exceed amount of $300,000 for pre-construction support services for the Rocky Reach facilities. Once design is complete, a guaranteed maximum price for construction will be negotiated. Staff will then develop an additional resolution, come back to the board to amend the contract for the construction of Rocky Reach facilities, not the dam. Clarify. Any questions?
Commissioners? Any questions?
So so with this type of a contractor construction manager approach, we won't have a total final price until we work our way through these steps.
Correct.
Is that right?
Well, we've worked taking hints from Rock Island's pre-construction, their estimating process, what we've been seeing for costs in the industry. They're at a 60% design level at Rock Island, so we're taking those cost cues, and the alternative that we've come to at Rocky Reach for the support facilities meets the budget that we have to do the work at Rocky Reach.
Oh, okay. All right.
So we've already went through costing in the pre-design with three alternatives that met the budget and the program needs. And now we'll work through with Leidig as we start construction, making sure that those costs reflect what construction is going to cost us.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Mm-hmm.
Kizzy, are we seeing any kind of a weakening in the cost of construction, or is it the price is still escalating?
We're still seeing escalated costs at this point.
Yeah. Boy. Tough to build anything in this environment.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is why you're going to this new method, which would help hopefully mitigate some of those costs.
Correct. We're able to, now we're looking at with a general contractor during design, so that we're not getting 100% design and then trying to go out on a bid and say, oh, well, I don't have enough money to do this project. So hopefully we're catching that early so that we're not in that situation.
Good.
We're learning a lot as we go along. Mm-hmm. We learned a lot from Rock Island. We're learning at Rocky Reach, and we're going to learn with respect to the service center too. Each time we make another step, we get better at this.
That's good. Great.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Casey.
Resolution number 12 is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for 28 MBA 115-12.47 kV substation power transformers, bid number 18-67, and authorizing the 28 MBA 115-12.47 kV substation power transformers be obtained by negotiation. Tom Kelly is going to present this.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm Tom Kelly, substation engineer. And, commissioners, I believe you're aware and have had some presentations already about the need for building additional substations and the fact that this substations or the future substations part of the performance plan in the district for this year. And the purchase of these transformers are intricately tied to accomplishing all of that. The bids we received, they all contained various exceptions, primarily on the commercial side, also a few on the technical side. And from reviewing them, it's not clear that even if we were to try and narrowly tailor some of those commercial terms and try and rebid, it's not clear that we'd be able to actually still get a clean bid in the future. Also, a few of the exceptions indicated that the lead times are getting pretty long and it's going to start to be difficult meeting these schedules. In this case, the lowest bidder is the same manufacturer that we've awarded the previous four transformers, the previous four substations to. And we'd be hopeful that if we can negotiate the contract, that we'd find it low bidder acceptable and able to negotiate those commercial terms with them and go ahead and get these transformers on order. This contract includes two firm transformers that we're trying to get delivered this year. And at this point, it's looking like deliveries are starting to push out towards October and November of this year. It starts getting us into wintertime. There's the additional five transformers that would be part of this contract are all they're optional future transformers. So we're not going to be required to purchase them. However, we'd certainly like to have the option to have a contract in place, make things go smoother for the additional substations that we have planned to construct. The first two would be for the OMI, new OMI substation and old station that we're trying to get constructed this year. Following right up on that is improvements for the Wenatchee substation, new North Shore substation, and the new Leavenworth substation. So we'd like to ask for approval to go ahead and declare no bids received and negotiate this contract.
I'd like to add a couple of things here. We're trying to do something new here. We're by buying more transformers ahead, or at least creating the option to be able to do so, which will improve the efficiency of our process and allow us to hopefully both be able to move through this more quickly and to save some costs in terms of the procurements that would otherwise be necessary. I think I want to underscore a point that Tom made, and he made in our meeting prior to this, that we've got these two substations that we really are trying to get done this year. And the problem with waiting is that they have to be trucked from the Puget Sound area. Transformers are touchy things. You tend not to want to move them around on icy roads. And so the concern is we need to get moving on this so that we can get them here in time to be able to meet this construction season. I think we would have recommended going to the negotiation anyway, even without that. But with that, I would say it's a pretty compelling need that we move forward as quickly as we can.
So, Tom, I have a question. If we, is this like a quantity discount that I'm used to, and you know, my kind of purchasing where I buy five of something, I usually get a better deal than if I buy one. Is that, can I assume that because we're buying in larger quantity, that might help bring the unit cost down?
I don't think that these bids necessarily reflect a quantity discount.
Okay.
And probably partially because those five additional units are optional. They're not firm. And we wanted to make them optional. Part of the difficulty in this is coming up with an escalation formula that's acceptable to the PUD as well as acceptable to whatever manufacturer. And that's been fairly difficult. Most of the bids were taking exception. That was one of the items they took exception. All the manufacturers want to gain an edge and keep their own escalation formula. So we wanted to make sure that we had the opportunity to see on the future units whether the escalation, or the price due to the escalation is acceptable to the PUD, and if it wasn't, to allow us to forego those future purchases and go back to bid again if we wanted to.
Where are these being manufactured?
If we were to come to an agreement with the lowest bidder, that would be in down near Mexico City.
Okay.
And they then starts after that, kind of second bidder was in Mexico, another one was in Korea, and then I think the remainder of them, the bids were from the East Coast, Midwest and East Coast.
I was curious whether or not a tariff with China would have any impact on the uncertainty of an escalation and increase clause. Because you wouldn't know what the tariff impact would be. So that was the purpose of the question. Yeah, they're not coming out of China.
They're not coming out of China, no.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Should we vote all of them together, or do you want to do this one separately? Does it matter?
Commissioners, does it matter?
Do them all together.
Yeah.
It's easier to do them all together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much, Tom.
Okay. Okay, agenda 13 is a resolution authorizing amendment number 3 to system agreement SA number 16-169 with Accenture LLP of Herndon, Virginia to provide enterprise search development services. Todd Walsh will be presenting today.
Good afternoon. My name is Todd Walsh. I am a senior systems analyst in our information technology department. I'll start with a little background first and then explain the resolution to you, because we started this project about a year and a half ago. So in May 2017, which still feels like yesterday to me, you authorized a system agreement with, well, it was a different company that was bought by Accenture, so we could develop an enterprise search system. Enterprise search is, imagine, you know, Google or Bing or Yahoo style search for all of SLAMPUD's electronic file content. So it gives a, you know, it's an example of innovation and doing more for technology, because it saves us a lot of labor effort for the old way of finding information, which consists of scrolling through file folders and opening and closing documents to try to find what you need. So, you know, an individual search typically saves people up to an hour trying to find data that they need for their projects. In some cases, it can save up to, you know, a week or two at a time. A good example of that is the group that was working on the Chelan surge tank power washing project needed some pictures to support design, some historical pictures. You know, and after, you know, spending a couple of days trying to find all the pictures they need, we sat down. This is in the middle of the development of the enterprise search system. We sat down and utilized that to try to find pictures, and we were able to uncover a couple thousand pictures just by typing a few key search words, and within seconds. So that first portion of the project, which we completed at the end of 2017, was to capture all content that our generation department uses to support their design and engineering. This year, because it was so successful, we kind of extended that to incorporate content from our enterprise or from our asset management system, Maximo. So it's real easy for planners and analysts to find information about our assets without having to know a work order off the top of their head or the name of an asset. They can just enter a quick search term and quickly get the notes they need out of the Maximo system. So this resolution is a request to increase the contract value from that system agreement with Accenture from what is currently $544,000 to $1,044,000. That'll allow us to extend the system to cover all our district content. So for our distribution department, transmission department, our other departments, parks, hatcheries, and that will allow us to, that'll give us the funding needed for the next 3 years to cover ongoing software licensing and then the support and services to extend the system out to all district departments. This will be the third amendment on this contract. The first one was to transfer the contract or novate it, I'm not sure how you say that, to Accenture, because this was the initial contract was through a competitive bidding process. So that's how we selected a company named Search Technologies, who was then promptly purchased by Accenture. Like all successful small software development companies, they're targets for purchase. The second amendment was to was for the 2018 scope of work, where we extended the system out to include the asset management information within the enterprise search.
So this service agreement be managed out of Accenture's Seattle office?
It's in Herndon, Virginia, is where their corporate headquarters are located. But the people we work with at Accenture are in Utah. Arizona.
They're in Utah, okay, because there is an office in Seattle.
Oh, there is? Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. They purchased this search technology software company, and they maintain their resources, which was I was worried about that at first, but, you know.
So their technical firm's Utah, then.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Part of the reason we contracted this out, you know, it's an expertise that they possess that, you know, they can do it a lot more efficiently and effectively than we can with our resources. So part of the next work over the next 3 years will be learning more about, because, you know, when you start with new technology, sometimes you rely on expertise for them to develop it for you. And then over time, you start to transition that knowledge so you can adopt it yourself internally.
So it's a 3-year license. You don't own the software. Is that correct?
Correct. So it's a, yes, it's a subscription to their software. So instead of purchasing the software, we pay an annual subscription fee. So it gives us the right to use their software on an annual basis. And in the contract, our terms and conditions allows us to renew it every year or not based on, so we have that right of termination or renewal within the existing contract.
So that information, then we apologize for not recalling all the details, but we scan all this information into this database for our use. Do we own that data?
Oh, correct. Yeah, so this is not a hosted system. So we're running this entire system on premise. So our contractors that do the work, you know, we still go through the whole process of getting them certified and verified and authorized accounts and access onto our system and our servers. So when we scan in the search word, they call it crawling the content, then that all the information for the index that's used for the search is stored on our servers.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. The other unique thing about this technology is it also honors all of our securities, all of our network securities. So if I'm searching for a file, if I'm searching for information, I don't see that in the search results if it's something I'm not allowed to see based on my permissions within the network.
Thank you.
That answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, this request is to carry us to the next 3 years. But I mean, I'm hopeful this just becomes a system that's part of the PUD for forever because of the benefit of it.
So the one thought that comes into my mind as we move forward with implementation of a CIS and cybersecurity continues to grow in importance. Is this housed entirely on our system? And so there's no door for cyber?
That's correct. Yeah, it's on our network and on our, right? So all of the protections we have in place for cybersecurity,
right,
protect this system as well. I mean, you have to, another good example of our innovation here is this, the two-factor authentication we have, I have to sign in, then I press a button, get my number. And then I can log in, and then I add my own unique number to the end of that. So that's, for anyone to use this system, they would have to have an account on our network and sign in just like they normally do.
So in terms of Accenture doing any kind of an update to the system, that probably is not downloaded to us. It's probably provided to us in some format that we...
Yeah, they're authorized contractors, so they also have, we give all of our IT vendors and contractors, we give them one of these as well. So they have an account on the system, and we do their background checks just like we do regular employees. So they help us out with that, right? We can download stuff, but then they still log on to the system to do the work for us and keep it configured and updated and running properly.
We've probably done all the background in terms of their security, knowing that they're not downloading something to us.
Problem. Craig, I don't know all the details on that because I'm not in the network engineering department.
But right.
Right, Greg? Yeah, I mean, they get their background checks, and in all of our IT contracts, correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, we require, maybe not all of them, but at least in this one, we require them to sign the CEII and the BCSI non-disclosure agreement, so they're bound to those terms and conditions as well when they're signing on. Yeah.
Thanks. Cybersecurity is the one thing that probably more than anything else keeps me awake at night.
Yeah, oh, I know, yeah, I think all of us, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah. Great.
Any other questions? Or?
I think not. Thank you very much.
All right,
appreciate
you.
It. Good presentation.
Yep. Everyone.
Yep. Thank you. Well, commissioners, we have we need to pass.
Yep. On this. Mm-hmm. On 12 and 13.
All right. Commissioners, 11, 12, and 13. Commissioners, we have resolutions 11, 12, and 13. Do I hear a motion?
Would move approval of resolutions 11, 12, and 13.
Second.
We've been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those against? The ayes have it.
Okay, so what we're going to do now is we had some items that normally would be in the study session. We had anticipated that Craig Carrington would be flying in on the noon flight, but unfortunately the 6 inches of snow in Seattle stranded him there. But fortunately, Dana Jaspers and Andrew Gassell were quite prepared to make this presentation. Good contingency planning and the fact that they've also been heavily involved in this from the beginning anyway. So with that, we're going to start with the Energy Resources Quarterly Board update. Janet, will you be starting and lead here?
So, Janet Jaspers, Energy Planning and Trading Manager, and apologize for my scratchy voice today. It wasn't because of the Super Bowl. It was getting over a chest bowl.
Super Bowl was nothing to shout about.
I know. We'll get started. We're just going to cover kind of our overview of our portfolio, take a look at snowpack, extreme flow pricing update. We have a net wholesale revenue forecast update. Take a look at another update to the market, and then Andrew is going to give the energy efficiency update. Have some key message points. And this slide we typically have in here. Just kind of goes over a couple things that we're watching. I think not much is different than last time. I think lots of movement on the state carbon policy was covered by Tracy this morning. But we won't go over that. District's load resource balance. And so we haven't sold any new slices since we were here last quarter. So this looks very similar. Some of the block sales are a little bit different. But we have our max hedge limit, the top red line, lower hedge limit, and we're well within that. Then when we take a look at the market-based license contracts, we have several layered in here, and there's been no changes since last quarter. Looking back at the whole year for 2018 water supply forecast, and this is for Grand Coulee, January through July. So over on the left-hand scale, we have seasonal volumes in million acre feet, and our scale across the horizontal axis is just the month. So following the black line, started off on October, real near 100% or real close to normal, stayed there until about February. In February, we started getting quite a bit of precip, all the way up over 120% of normal, came back down, and ended up the year at 119% of normal. So taking a look at 2019, just going to fast forward in here, just since we're on Grand Coulee. So far this year, we've kind of hung right around normal. It's kind of gone below normal. This green line is normal, kind of a trending downward line if you look at the blue dots. So for Grand Coulee, January through July, at this time, January 22nd, it was 89% of average. I just looked before I walked down here. The most recent one was issued on February 3rd, and we're down at 87% for February 3rd. Taking a look at kind of just seasonal outlooks for February, March, and April. On the left, we have precip, so it looks like we're kind of average to below average precip for those 3 months. On the right, we have temperature. We see kind of the darker orange color, so above average chances for warmer temps. The Canadian forecasters are sometimes slightly different, have some different models than the U.S. forecasters. So on the left are precip. We have white, which is about equal chances of above and below normal precip. On the right, we have temperature, and we have the red, which means looking at warmer than normal temperatures. Switching over to natural gas pricing, and this is for Henry Hub for a February 2019 contract. So last time we were here, last quarter, the contract was selling for $3.21 per MMBTU, or million BTU, and on January 23rd, it was trading $2.99. We did have some time in the middle there where it was upwards of mid $4 range, as high as $4.70. That was kind of that extreme cold in the Northeast caused those price increases. Since then, we've had some real mild temperatures across the U.S., and it's actually dropped below back when we were here in October. And this spike that we had looked kind of big on the last chart, but this yellow box is the whole chart that was the previous chart. And so if you look back in 2008-9, you saw some really high prices, $14 range. And so this makes that $4.70 look pretty small in comparison. Switching gears and taking a look at electricity prices. And this chart is showing MIDSE flat forward price curve. So the black solid line is current, and the blue dashed line was the price when we set budget back in November 2018. And so you can see that here in Q2 2019, the price is quite a bit higher. Q3, the price is quite a bit higher. And even the forward market has increased a bit. Most of it's kind of Q2. You can see a price increase there, and also Q3.
So we're definitely seeing a change in the market from as a result of the high prices last summer. And the question is this going to be sustained? But we've had an awful lot of years here when this graph has always been our black line was blue, was below the dotted blue line, so just different. And now we're asking ourselves, is this going to be a significant and sustainable change, or is it just a blip? Mm-hmm.
We're kind of take a look at MIDSE flat annual wholesale electricity prices back through 2001. For 2019, when we set budget back November, that calendar price for 2019 was $28.91, and in late January it was $29.50, about an increase of 50 cents. And just like what Steve had said, some of these prices out in these forward years are kind of higher than what we have seen in the last couple. Taking a look at the whole annual 2018 net wholesale revenue. So just energy sales were down about $3 million from budget. A lot of that, or a big proportion of that, was the Lakeland surge tank outage, reduced generation too. We couldn't run our generation during that, and that wasn't included in the revenue numbers for the budget. That was due to the Lakeland outage midsummer. Our premium for specified source is actually up by $1.2 million. The renewables bundled is a plus 0.6, but then you can see on this on other related revenue, renewables unbundled is in the opposite direction. So it was kind of how they're booked. So kind of looking at them together, we're doing a slight modification how accounting for those bundled versus unbundled reason. Then our long-term power contracts, we're seeing surplus and admin fees were quite a bit above what was budgeted. And our real-time revenue was $2.5 million over budget. So bottom line, $17.8 million higher than budget. And I was just thinking to myself, I never remember a year I got to come in here and say, oh, we're close to $18 million higher than budget. And I think this is the first. So. 2027. So we have the Q4 line, which is this kind of medium blue line, and we have a green line, a purple line, and an orange line, which is kind of hard to tell the difference because there's basically been not much change in our forecast for the last three quarters. It's pretty tight results. Moving on to Lakeland lake level. So, the blue shaded area is our expected operating range. The orange area is kind of for our operating range expected for the remainder of 2019. So it's pretty narrow throughout this next couple of months, and we're basically right on top of that dry average water year target curve. Just a couple days ago, or last week, we actually did get up into the mountains and were able to do the manual snow survey. And John Wozniewski is going to be putting out those results. But our preliminary February 1st runoff forecast is going to be right at 80% of normal.
It's the lowest in a while, so it definitely got our attention.
Yeah.
Did you go up and do that, Steve?
No. It's worth doing. It's got to be a crew member, though. It's no free ride.
So for market information on the left, we have lower forecasted spot gas prices for 2019. And so kind of coming into 2019, prices were higher. They've kind of fallen. Most of that just is because we've had, or not we, but here in the Northwest, overall in the U.S. has had a fairly mild winter up until last week. And so the inventories are pretty good. And over on the right-hand side, Nevada and NV Energy plans to add 1,001 megawatts of solar and 100 megawatts of storage to replace some aging coal plants. And so the second paragraph here, bullet point, shows kind of this price range of some of the solar contracts that we've seen go into place. And then NV Energy has renewables, doubling their renewables, and then a long-term goal of 100% renewable energy to its customers.
Janet, what's the net value of solar credits, for lack of better terminology? Or do you know at this moment in time, when you combine state and federal, I mean, what's the subsidy?
I would hate to even guess right now. Look that up and get back to you.
That'd be great. I'm really curious.
Some of the production.
That number is so low.
Okay.
So the ITC, people generally say it's worth about $20 a megawatt hour. So that's federal tax credit?
Yep.
Each state has its own policy. So
In addition to.
So you'd have to then assess against each state in the West. Are you asking for in Washington State or because we've got a Nevada slide up there for Nevada?
Well, I was asking, looking at this number, what does this number mean to me?
Yeah, so I think the first thing you do is probably add about $20 to it. And then, of course, this is a raw energy cost. It doesn't have any of the integration costs associated with it as well. So you'd have to add the capacity value, which that one's a more difficult one for us to calculate because it depends on the solar project and what its output is. Easy to say it's well north of double that.
Looking at the first part of the Nevada slide, it talks about 100 megawatts of storage. What is the storage? Is that battery or?
Yes,
battery. Okay, thank you.
Okay. And now I'm going to pass it to Andrew.
Thanks. This is Andrew Grissel with our Customer Energy Solutions Group. And this is our Q4 energy efficiency results. And so Just as a reminder, our two-year compliance target is 2.42 average megawatts. We had an annual 2018 stretch target of 1.7 average megawatts. Happy to say that we exceeded our stretch target. We acquired about 1.85. We actually did it for less than originally budgeted as well, which is great. And so we did it for about $3 million. And you can see how that results in a low levelized cost as well as a estimated value over the life of those projects. And the life of those projects, we generally do a weighted average life of around 15, 16 years, somewhere in there. And so we had a real good year, real happy with the team. Large portion of that, over 50% of those savings, were from our commercial programs, which we just started about really in-depth about 3 years ago, so those have been ramping up. We're getting a lot of lighting projects as well as working with one of our contractors to get some of the big national accounts, so the Walmarts and the Home Depots and the Lowe's, to do projects, and so we've been getting some big savings from those projects as well. I also wanted to provide an update on our LED streetlight project. If you've been driving around town at night, you've probably seen that there's a large number of lights that have been changed out. The project is approximately 70% complete, complete across most of the county. Most of the WASDOT lights have been installed as well. Currently, we're working on the city of Wenatchee, which is approximately 55% of the total project work. And we're going to be doing the major thoroughfares, Wenatchee Avenue, some of the big arterials, working with the contractor to do those in off-peak hours. Most of the lighting work has been done during the day. We don't want to worsen any congestion, and so we'll be working on those in the evenings as well. We're also doing some work up in Kashmir that we'll be finishing up also with some of the grounding work that was required for some of their lighting system up there. That's all being taken care of by the Transportation Improvement Board grant. So it's a great upgrade for the city of Kashmir too. So path forward, complete the city of Wenatchee, Kashmir retrofits, and we plan to be complete by the end of February. All right. Give a summary? Sure. So as we mentioned, the district's 2018 net wholesale revenue and other revenues were higher than expected by almost $18 million. Specified source energy sales contributed about $5 million to that number. Which is about $1.2 million higher than it was. Our energy efficiency programs exceeded our annual targets by almost 10%, with an estimated value over their life of about $6 million. And then installation, as I just mentioned, of the LED projects, the LED streetlight project is about 70% complete, with expected completion in February.
Those are really good numbers.
You guys had a good year.
You hit the ball out of the park. Yeah. Good job. I have to tell you, I came down in the work this morning. I left the house. It was still dark. And I noticed right away when I came to one of the intersections that it was LED lights. And at first it's like, why does this look different? Well, now I know why. So it's a really good job, and it does add a lot more light.
Mm-hmm. You
know, a lot easier to see, especially when the snow's coming down.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, you'll notice they're not the super blue ones. That's the old ones. So, 5 years, 10 years ago, they were really blue cold.
Yeah,
and we waited long enough so that they could get the, get the warmer temperatures down, so that the transition between the sodium, the high pressure sodium, and these lights it's not as distinct as it used to be. So people they notice something a little different, but it's not like just right there in their face. So
if you could just do something that would help LEDs work better in enclosed fixtures, not. My only complaint in my house.
Yes. I'm sure they're working on that.
I'm sure they are.
I'm sure they are.
Jenny and Andrew, great job. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to ask these guys to stay. We're going to now move into the strategic planning topics, growth, phase for growth, and the wholesale versus retail question. And they're going to take that on, too.
Right. Oh, they're already open. Thank you. So Greg has two questions related to the strategic planning process that we're initiating this Thursday. And one of those is looking at revisiting the growth base for growth as it relates to sort of the organic infrastructure that we provide with especially the electrical system. And so I know Steve mentioned earlier, these are going to be 20 to 30-minute presentations. We're going to get through it much quicker than that, and so we'll provide just some high-level points and maybe spend a little bit longer time on a slide or two that are kind of the main concepts of what we're talking about. Here's the overview slide. You'll see as we move through what it looks like. But really, we're going to have our question. We're going to provide participants with an overview of that. This question is looking at, should Chelan PUD lean towards growth pays for growth, which supports our lower rates for existing customers, or towards economic development, which is supportive of jobs growth and increased economic activity in the county. As an example, currently we have a very defined build-out process. We hit 80%. Once we hit 80%, we start our purchase design build of a substation. Should we be going and looking at doing that ahead of those sort of numbers that we have now? Is there a reason to do that? And so we'll talk about this, and as I move through this, I'm going to use kind of two sideboards as an example. And so it's not that those are any options, they're just examples of what we can do, and then it could be anywhere in between, and that's what we're going to be working with a group of economic development experts as well as others to answer that question. And then we're also doing a survey at the same time, the same survey as John mentioned earlier in his presentation with the aesthetics. So what are we focusing on? First, using this slide, that sets up where the topic will focus on, while reaffirming that our already low rates support economic activity. Wanted to make sure we captured that we're not going to focus on this area, but it's important for people to know what we do already helps support economic activity within our community through lower rates, through more dollars in people's pockets. There's an infrastructure piece over here, and there's several different components to that, anywhere from hooking it up straight to the house or a building out to the distribution lines and beyond. And so it's covering all of those, and there's different ways we go about assessing those and looking at those. And really it's kind of a twofold question we're looking at is, how should the PUD build infrastructure for organic load growth, and how should it recover those costs to support economic development? And so you can recover costs up front, you can spread it out over time, or you can socialize it amongst everyone. What does that look like? We have a slide on current practices or backgrounds. I won't spend a lot of time on this one because it could take time. It could take a lot of time. But anyways, so that we know that we've had a general philosophy for a while, we know that it takes 3 to 5 years for completion using our current build-out methodology. And also noting that, when large loads come online, we can go from that 80 to 100% really quickly in a much quicker fashion than what we would do typically this 3 to 5 year period. Switch slides. This slide is meant to conceptualize two sideboards associated with building out infrastructure. You can kind of do a just-in-time method, which is generally, I think Toyota is the one that really brought this into being for manufacturing process, but it's where waste is minimized and inventory is minimized. And so you're trying to put things in exactly when you need it, when you need it. There's also this sort of build it, they will come perspective, where you could just build in everything ahead of time, hopefully, and it will draw people in and use it up. So there's that perspective as well. Today we're kind of over here. We're trending this way with by doing some better planning with our municipals by going out and looking at properties that are going to be needed ahead of time and purchasing and getting the permitting done on those. Also, the material contract for transformers, where you can go and buy more than one transformer on a contract, and then also looking at accelerated build-out by the developers. So using all of our what we would want and our criteria, having a developer build it instead. And then somewhere in here there's a balance. And we don't have the answer to this. This is just setting up the question. This slide I wanted to use is meant to show examples of the trade-offs by using two sideboards. And so the two sideboards are number 1 and 3. You can have a build it as needed and require upfront payment. So that's kind of combining the when you build it with how do you pay for it, one. When you look at the risks to rates, as well as the opportunity to support economic development, it's generally a low, so it's really good on the rate risk, but it might not be as supportive to economic development as maybe some other option would be. And then between the 2 and 3, or between the 1 and 3, I have a we've developed a, you know, what if you build a couple locations in the county, you pre-build them, and then capture costs over time, so using a rate rider or some sort of LUD, local utility district, something like that, some other way of paying for that, not socializing the costs over the, all the customers. What does that look like? You know, well, there is still a little bit of rate risk, because if you build it out and say you don't get people to come, you know, then those are costs have to be paid for. But it's also a little higher on the economic development opportunity, because generally one of the things companies are looking for now is, are there sites that they can get into much more quickly, you know, one within a year, for example. And then, of course, you have build it, they will come, and the extreme side of socializing all those costs. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, high opportunity, but you also have a really high rate risk, because you don't know exactly maybe where those should go, where in the county they should be. And if you just build it out all over, then there's that kind of risk. And so that's kind of the concepts. Those are the sideboards with, there could be anything in between here. And so that's kind of where we're looking at and trying to get some input on from our community. So we're using a couple different methods to gain that insight. We have an economic development working group. This has both economic development professionals as well as members from low income groups. Also getting having a Latino representative as well. And we're also going to be open when we have the presentation on the 7th. We're also going to be open if there's anybody else that would like to be a participant. We would offer that they would have that ability to join on as well. And so we're also developing questions for the countywide survey that John Stahl talked about earlier today. And we'll have questions related to this in a very similar vein to his on this topic, so that we can gain insight from the community as well. Economic development professionals are going to be very optimistic about it. We want to hear what the community has to say about that. And then we'll have and summarize those results and share with the Board of Commissioners for deliberation. And that's all within our time frame. So
that'll be an interesting conversation.
If you have a little bit of curiosity in you, it's interesting to see how that's going to look and
yeah.
To see what if there are differences between different groups. So, any questions?
So I think my question is called question number 6. It's really taking a look at wholesale sales versus retail sales. So overview, we're going to kind of cover the question real quick. Some background on current wholesale and retail sales volumes and kind of why we're even asking the question. Kind of discuss that we have a lot of scenarios that we always plan for, and we want good outcomes under all of those scenarios. Take a look at some of the financial outcomes for those various scenarios, and then how are we going to seek input from our customer owners? So the question is really kind of a statement and then a question. So currently, Chelan County PUD retail rates are subsidized by wholesale power revenues. And a fundamental question for this strategic plan is, should Chelan PUD reduce emphasis on wholesale marketing to focus more on growing retail loads and economic development? So Andrew's topic with the economic development in mind really kind of play off each other. And so on February 7th, when we have our kickoff meeting with the public, Andrew and my questions are going to be both in one room. Kind of piggyback together. So here's some background on wholesale versus retail sales. So basically, Chelan has much more generation than retail load, and we must plan for a balance of kind of the retail sales versus wholesale sales and kind of asking people for their input of what that balance should be. take a look at 2014 actuals, we basically have 1,039 megawatts to sell. In 2014, retail sales were about 17% of that amount that we were selling in total. In 2022, with load growth, retail load growth, that red piece of the pie went from 17% to about 22%. So just to kind of see a breakdown of that piece of red pie, so out of 1,084 average megawatts, retail sales is forecasted, of course this is kind of 2022, so it's right in the middle of that strategic planning period. We have a forecast for 228 average megawatts of retail sales. Of that 128, 199 is what we're kind of calling organic, so it's a mixture of residential, commercial, industrial. Then crypto is right around 11 average megawatts in 2022, and HDL is around 18 average megawatts. Then wholesale sales is really about 79%, so the blue area, again, 79%. So in our plans and with even our integrated resource plan, we kind of test that whole portfolio. The portfolio contains retail sales and wholesale sales, and we test it under various scenarios. So some of those variables we like to test are retail growth. So we test low expected high retail growth. Wholesale prices are one of our bigger variables in revenues. So we're testing low current and high wholesale price scenarios. Also, we take a look at stream flow and unit outages. For this topic, we're really concentrating on the retail growth and wholesale prices, those two variables together in combinations of both. And, so even though we are still considering those variables, just concentrating on the two. So for retail sales, there's definitely pros and cons for retail sales. And, some of the pros, I'll just let you read through them real quick. I think probably one of the most important ones to kind of focus on is the last one under the cons. So under most wholesale price scenarios, adding retail load results in overall revenue losses. On wholesale sales, definitely your pros and cons too. I'll just kind of brush over that, get into that more on February 7th. And I think this is kind of the culmination of all the information. So lots of bright colors here. It's kind of stare at this, and it kind of pops out at you. But over on the left-hand axis, we have, if you have growth in this sector, what happens? And then kind of on that horizontal axis, this is kind of various wholesale prices, and it's kind of just the price of energy plus the carbon-free attribute and what we get. So, for example, if we had load growth in the organic load, which is last year was about 98% of our total load, and if wholesale prices are kind of what's currently forecasted, it's red. So kind of a decrease in total revenue for the district. So then basically this whole bar is red. So kind of in lower or higher than expected wholesale sales, still kind of overall loss for the district in revenues. We did spend a lot of time this past year on high-density load rate. And so it's based on kind of our cost of production plus cost of delivery, actual cost of delivery. And so there's a spot in here where it basically has a neutral effect on revenue. But if prices are higher and you have more high-density load, that would be negative to the PUD's revenues, but under a very low wholesale price market, and you added some high-density load at that current structure, it might be good for the overall revenue of the district. And also, we in 2018 and kind of ongoing to 2019, a lot of work was done in that cryptocurrency rate. And the rate really is a market cost rate. And so it's kind of, we try to make it neutral for Chelan PUD customer owners under any circumstance. So we're always pricing at market, and we have some adders for our costs. So it's neutral under any wholesale price circumstance.
I want to pause for a second. This, I think, is a really important chart because it explains something that's strategically different than it was a few years ago. We're trying to communicate it, particularly to the economic development community, that it matters what kind of load you bring to us in terms of the revenue impact on the district. And I think, you know, we've historically, we have thought about, and I think the many people who think about us think at that top line, the organic load, and now our rates are subsidized and any load growth is bad. The HDL load really creates a different picture, and the cryptocurrency load brings a completely different picture. So we want the economic development community to understand when you bring us a load, it depends what kind of load you bring us in terms of how we're going to react to it relative to the financial impact on us.
And then since Andrew and I are really going to kind of be in the same group, we're utilizing the same economic development working group and have the same topic team room on February 7th kickoff. We're both have questions in the countywide survey, and similarly, we're going to share results with the board.
I would just say that wraps up not only this presentation, but overall the presentations we have for Thursday. Do a quick check-in. Does this seem like the right material to be presenting? Any lack of comfort with what we're doing here?
Yeah. Janet, just backing up a little bit, just in thought, it seems like to me peak and off-peak has had a change. It seems like, you know, I'm just – throwing out numbers, but at one point, if you had $25 for off-peak, peak was 45. Seems like now they're all just kind of like in the 30s. Some variation in the 30, the line is much closer. Am I just imagining that, or
no.
Is that?
No.
And, so, is, and is there a reason if I'm not?
I think there's a multitude of reasons. So I think your observation in general is accurate. So I can just, because I've been asked this question recently. So in March 2018, we took a look at the next 5 years that on off-peak spread. It was $6.02.
Mm-hmm.
It was mid-March sometime, I'm thinking. Just recently, I did it basically for that same time period, and it was right around $9, so about a 50% increase in on-peak, off-peak spread.
Mm-hmm.
So it can change rapidly over time. kind of scarcity of capacity makes a big difference. And so we had, I think, the biggest change between those two time periods, between March and now, is the natural gas pipeline.
Okay.
And everyone said, ooh, look at how high prices went. We might be kind of closer. Capacity is probably worth more than we once thought it was. And so the market's kind of continuing to self-adjust based on new information, new prices.
Yeah. It's just been interesting to kind of watch. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions? Thank you, Andrew.
No.
Janet, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Good presentation.
Yeah. Good presentations today.
Absolutely. Very informative.
Yeah.
Good job, Steve.
Yeah.
And with that, actually, we're ready to move to a manager item, which is directly related. Justin, as we're going to be doing regularly, is going to provide an update on what's going on in strategic planning, both looking backwards and then forward the next couple of weeks.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. To reflect back over the last couple of weeks since I reported to you last, we've had the opportunity to present before the City of Chelan, City of Wenatchee, and before CAFE, which is an organization, and that acronym stands for Community for the Advancement of Family Education. That last one of note was our first presentation that was done in dual language. That was especially rewarding. Had great feedback at all three of those events, and I appreciate those commissioners that were able to attend some of those as well. All told now, I think we've been to about 12 different events, city council meetings, community council meetings, civic organizations, et cetera. So it's been a busy couple of months, and I think we're well positioned to have a good turnout come Thursday at the kickoff meeting. We are tallying RSVPs today and making a final push to get attendees. Looking forward in terms of other outreach besides the 7th, there'll be one tomorrow morning with Wenatchee Sunrise Rotary Club. And then that's actually the last thing that we have scheduled at this time. And so we kind of envision a period now while the topic team process is underway where there may be a little bit of a lull in presentations. And then we'll do a series of presentations again towards the end of the process, say in June and July and late May. And so, for instance, scheduled a meeting last week that will occur on May 28th at the Chelan Rotary. And so at those later meetings, we'll be able to provide an update on where we're at in the process. We can also look at the attendees on Thursday, and if there's gaps, if we are missing – you know, parts of the county or particular entities, then certainly we can make another effort now early in the process to engage again. But I think based on what we're seeing right now, we're pretty comfortable with the outreach effort. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Good.
Looking forward to
Thursday.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Just one quick question. Could you provide just a list of some of the service clubs that you have reached out to, only from the standpoint that might help jog my memory on some that you haven't yet, we can put you in touch with?
Absolutely. And the service clubs, it's a great opportunity. One of the challenges, though, is that they tend to book their speakers out 3 to 4 months in advance. And so probably I will send you that list. When you look at that list, you'll see that there's probably fewer service clubs than there are other organizations, entities. So I say that to say that any help the commission can provide and to make sure that we hit every one that we need to, then we very much appreciate that. Thank you.
I just have one other manager item, and that's to report back. The question came up at the last board meeting on the Chelan transmission options presentation as to whether we should add the 4th option. We went back and quickly decided that made sense. We'd already done the work on it anyway. It seems like an obvious question that people would ask is whether to come across from that South Shore substation into the south of Chelan area. And, of course, it from a transmission standpoint, it is actually a better option. It does have certainly some environmental challenges associated with it. But for completeness, it seemed to make sense to include it. So we're going to plan to do that. And with that, I think we're up to commission items.
Commission items? Commissioners, any items to discuss?
I just have share with my fellow commissioners. I had the unique opportunity recently to go up to Vancouver, B.C., and go to PowerX. And I got to tell you, my learning was exponential. It just was so good. And expanded my view of the PUD and the importance of our relationships with our neighbor to the north, and what a good relationship that is both for them and for us. And that just really struck me as very, very important. And so it was great learning, and I appreciated our staff and PowerX staff bringing me up to speed, and was a great learning opportunity. So thank you.
That's
it's always a fun trip to have an opportunity to see what the trading floor looks like, which far exceeded my expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Commission travel? Rebecca's going to do it this month. Lisa is out.
Rebecca Garfine, clerk of the board. I was going to review your travel for the next month or so. Coming up yet in February, we have the Waputa Association meetings. I show Commissioners Arsenault and Smith departing on the 12th and Commissioner McKenna on the 13th, and you'll see your reservations there.
I probably need to change that to the 12th as well. The
new commissioner starts at 9 a.m.
The work on the Hill is up on this Thursday or Wednesday.
This Thursday, the coffee serving
coffee is Thursday. Thursday morning.
Oh, okay. So then I'm all right.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And then a little bit later in February, we have the NWPPA Executive Committee meeting coming up for Commissioner Congdon. She'll be there the 19th through the 22nd. February 25th through 27th is the Waputa and APPA Legislative Rally in Washington, D.C. I show Commissioners Arsenault and Smith attending. March 6th through 8th is the NWPPA Board of Trustees meeting in Portland for Commissioner Congdon. And March 13th through 15th is the Waputa Association meetings. Again, I show Commissioner Smith departing on March 12th, and Commissioners Arsenault, Bowles, and McKenna on March 13th. And then wrapping up March is the Water Committee meeting on the 28th with Commissioner Congdon traveling on the 27th. Any changes needed there? Or?
No.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and our follow-up on action items, we had three from the last meeting. The first one I already mentioned, and that's how we'd handle the transmission to the South Shore substation, the options there. We had one with respect to the question about providing appropriate PUD signage on properties. That actually is an interesting question because we have a lot of properties, and you know, what do we want to do on different properties? So we actually want to give that one a little bit more thought. Planning to get back to you in about a month on that one. And then the question about additional information on causes of fires in California. We think we have all the source documents now, so we're just working through our way through them to make sure that we do understand them. So probably the next meeting we'll come back to you and be able to describe to you at least what's in the public domain about that. In terms of follow-up items from this meeting, a few. Question for John to look at the to provide some information from the City of San Diego in terms of their undergrounding plan. Plan to get that to all the board members. Question about what it constitutes a nexus for the Rock Island project and what's a list of past projects that we funded. So, be putting that together. Specific request to include the mission statement at the beginning of. The PPB presentation for strategic planning, particularly the focus on enhancing the quality of life in Chelan County. Justin will be providing a list of service clubs that have received the strategic planning presentation. And then I wasn't sure on the solar subsidy question whether my rather generic answer was enough or whether you wanted more specific information about that.
I'm not, you know, I think it is a moving target state by state. And so I'm good.
You're good. Okay. All right. If we find something that's more specific,
yeah,
forward it along. So that's what I got. Did miss anything?
Okay. Looking around the room, I don't see any public in the room. This is the point where public would have the opportunity for additional public comment. Matters of general business that may necessarily come before the commission. Seeing none. We need to move into an executive session. Do we
The executive session will be to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement action litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party, and or legal risks as associated by the RCEW, and to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by RCEW. Do we need a few minute break?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so why don't we be back here by 2:30? Is that enough time? We'll be back here.
I would ask for 90 minutes, although it's really going to be up to you how long that takes.
Okay. So we will have a 90-minute executive session.
Starting at 2:30.
Starting at 2:30. I think my last. We're coming out of executive session, January 7th, 2019. We will need to re-enter back into executive session till 4:20. We're coming out of executive sessions, January 7, 2019. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.